Comic-Con Day 1. This is our recap of Wednesday preview night for Comic-Con. I'm Eric.
I am James.
And we had a lot in front of us when we got to Comic-Con.
Yeah, there's... Well, I guess if we want to start, why don't we say that we have never... This is our first year going to San Diego Comic-Con.
Right.
We've both... Eric, how many shows have you been to before?
A handful of bigger shows, yeah.
Okay. I've been going to cons for about 25 years. I started going when I was very, very young. And I've been going to Wizard World Chicago now. It'll be my 25th year going this year. And I've been to a lot of big cons. I've been to Gen Con. I've been to C2E2. I've been to a lot of big shows. And everyone has always talked about San Diego. And in Wisconsin growing up, it just always seemed like a kind of a white whale. Like,
you know, it's another cool world
to,
away.
Right. It'd be cool to go to San Diego, but is it worth renting an exorbitantly priced hotel, getting the airfare to go out there, and, you know, you're just going to be a small fish in a giant pond. And, you know, where do you even start? And then you kind of rationalize it and you go, well, San Diego must not be all that good because we're never going to get out there. So we're just going to pretend that it sucks or something. At some point, reality has to set in. You're like, we got to go out to San Diego. So finally we went out here. And of course, it has been, it's blown our minds. You know, I've seen so many cons and this, nothing compares to this. This is truly, the scale is something that I would not have even been able to comprehend.
So here we are, end of day one, exhausted, full of adrenaline.
Oh yeah,
you got literally picked up. You got picked up right off the boat. Basically, we came by, picked you up at the airport, and went straight to the convention. I've had the luxury of adjusting my body to the time difference here for a handful of days, but
two and a half hours on the road to get to Midway, half an hour in the airport, 4.5 hour flight, which was delayed because they had to go a little bit further south, so they had to bring a refueling truck in. We just sat there for 30 minutes. And then, you know, I get right off the plane. I've got all my stuff, and we just zip right off to the show to get our tickets. But I was ready for it. You know, I was chomping at the bit. I had to get in there, and we certainly got in there. I mean,
let's do this before we get
back. Ahead.
So you get off the plane. You're walking through the airport in San Diego. All you see is Comic-Con ads. Conan's pop figures. San Diego Comic-Con. I mean, it's everywhere. You're not even at the convention center yet, and it's already setting a tone.
Well, San Diego has been just walking around for the one day. Obviously, you're going to leave the convention center, right? You have to walk back to, at least you have to walk a little bit into the gas lamp district or to the surrounding area to pick up an Uber because they're not going to be able to even drive in to pick you up. And just walking around, you've seen how we've seen San Diego transformed. The restaurants, the bars, the stores, the hotels. I mean, entire freestanding buildings have had these sort of exterior
10 to 12 story skins for advertisements.
Exactly.
All the buses and transit.
Everything just becomes a giant advertisement. You know, and it's for less than a week. Really, these things go up, what, Tuesday, and they come down on Monday.
The thing that it reminds me of, if anybody's ever been to Times Square, and you go out to Times Square and you see just the monstrously tall billboards, the only thing it's missing in San Diego are the big videos, the big screens. Otherwise, you've got these, you know, luxury tower tall advertisements and just gobs of people everywhere. People that can't even get into the convention that just want to be a part of the atmosphere. Street vendors, street performers, and just residents. I mean, it is crazy. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
And you certainly have all types of people. Whatever you would expect cosplay-wise, if you've never been to San Diego, whatever you've seen at whatever show you've been to, you ain't seen nothing because the lines of people, I mean, there's 130,000 people here just
ticketed,
for Comic-Con.
Ticketed for the ticketed show. People. That doesn't count the people outside.
And that doesn't, exactly, and that... That doesn't count the people that are the weird people that are standing outside with big signs that say, I am deaf. Please give me your Comic-Con badge for a day. You know, and you probably can go up to them and go, what? And they'd say, oh, I want your Comic-Con badge. Oh, sorry. You know, there's so many people like that that are out there trying to scam stuff from from attendees, from congoers. So you kind of want to be a little bit careful. But it is an experience just going from the airport to the convention center.
Well, and the best part is you don't go to the convention center first. To get your badges, we had to go to the Marriott Hotel attached to the convention center to a whole separate ballroom that was nothing but set up for badges. And that's down to a system. We were in and out in less than five minutes.
They did it really well. Now, having never been to San Diego before, we aren't able to necessarily discern the difference, but we had been told that this is the first year that they've been using RFID pegged badges. Yep. So your badge has this Walking Dead card in it that's got an RFID chip. So anytime you walk into the convention center or walk out, you have to scan it. And obviously, if your badge doesn't scan, then they're not letting you in. So this is something I guess they've never done before, but they must have had, what, 150 people working the tables, checking people in?
Yeah, easily. Wizard World could take a page out of their book.
Yeah, Wizard World, it looks like something out of Dawn of the Dead with everybody sort of just getting in a big crowd and shuffling
like
up herds. It's terrible. But San Diego, they are professionals. There's no doubt about that. So we got our passes. And we,
being newbies, no clue where the heck we're going.
Right.
Just start walking towards the convention center. Which,
exactly,
for those of you that aren't aware, the convention center is basically the length of 10 football fields. And that is no joke. Because we walked that whole thing probably three times today.
Yeah.
It is huge. So we start walking outside, no clue where to go in. There's, you can get entries like A through H. So we get to, I think it was C, and we just kind of were like, well, we don't know. So we walk up to the door, we got our badges, and we go to the door attendant and just say, we don't know where to go in. Mm-hmm. And they looked at our badges, which say, because we're retailers, they say retailer on them. So they say, go to door D, gate D.
The badge that just about everyone else has, is if they're not doing anything at the show, says attendee.
Right.
And there's a lot of, we found out that there are, for instance, Hasbro, and this will make the average congoer happy. They will only sell for like the first 3 days to people with attendee badges. So if you're an exhibitor, you're a retailer, you can't stand in line to buy the exclusives. Only people that are attendees can get those.
Right.
So there's a pretty marked difference in what the badges say just based on how you can be treated by certain vendors.
Right.
But either way, as Eric was saying, we had retailer badges, which meant we're retailers, but we weren't exhibitors, because if you're setting up there, you have an exhibitor badge.
Right.
And so I think the first day,
I think they were a little confused today when we got there.
Yeah.
Because we walked with our retailer badges. We were let in the first doors, which I assume we'll probably be let in there every day. I don't know. We'll find out tomorrow when we go in. But we get in the first set of doors, which isn't the doors to the actual hall. And we're kind of like blind sheep just moving around and go to someone and say, where do we go? And they point you this direction. The next thing you know, we're standing at the doors to the convention hall. And the person asks, I think it was a guy, asked to see our badge. We hold it up and he's like, go on in.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you and I, we got there 2.5 hours early because we were going to meet up to do a comics and podcasting podcast with a couple of guys. But we couldn't even get up to the press area because we didn't have press credentials.
Right.
So we end up getting entered into the hall. And what's the first thing that we do when we get into the hall?
It's insane. But it wasn't set up when we walked in there. And I knew that they would be ready by the time it opened.
Oh, yeah.
But because I've set up at trade shows and things before, and it's amazing how much work you can do in 45 minutes when you got a big team of guys that have done this before.
And a deadline to open.
Right. But they're driving around with big forklifts and heavy
scissor jacks.
Right. They're pulling pallets all over the place. And we thought, man, this is behind. Did you take pictures?
I don't think I took any pictures. Maybe I did.
We'll find out. If we did, we'll post them, but I've kind of forgotten half of what we've done already. So, but it was really cool to be in. I've been in like Wizard World Chicago, which is a big show. I've gotten an exhibitor pass a couple times there, so it's always neat to go in there when everything's setting up. It's just got nothing on the show.
Oh, because Wizard World, I mean, you think of the biggest booths, and they're just screens that go up. If it's anything, these are like actual two-story booths that support like the DC booth, you could probably get 2 dozen people up above it. So it's structurally sound. Alex Ross, I think it's like you can get almost 12 people up on his.
Mm-hmm. The Fox one.
The Fox one, yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, just crazy. I mean, these are booths.
Right.
This isn't any little mom and pop show.
So what, the way that the floor is lined up, when we went in there, it took us a while kind of walking it to really get our bearings and figure everything out. But when you walk in, the middle of the show, it's sort of a long, long, long rectangle. So the middle of this big rectangle are going to be the companies that are set up. DC, Marvel, Valiant, Fox,
Image,
Dark Horse,
Warner Brothers,
etc. Yeah. You know, everybody down to the really, really small publishers.
Yeah. Titan was there, Viz Media.
Yeah, well, those are still big compared to a lot of the smaller publishers. Yeah. But then the right-hand side of this rectangle, once you go further down, is where the vendors are set up. Mm-hmm. And if you go a little bit further than that, the last teeny bit of the rectangle would be where the video games are set up. I know that there's like a big Square Enix set up there and a lot of other things. And a lot of them have got to get wristbands to play. We didn't really spend any time looking at the video games. Then when you go to the far left, I mean, obviously the big booths take up the majority of the space at the show. But when you go to the far left, that's where Artist Alley is. So that's where you're going to go down to see all of, you know, almost all of the creators that you want to meet when they're not doing a timed signing at the DC booth or the Marvel booth or the Image booth. And there were some of the bigger vendors that were down there too. Funko had a giant, giant, giant setup down there.
Yeah.
And that's how the place is laid out. We have spent almost no time in the vendor section. Nope. Compared to Wizard World, this is the one area where I would say it's indisputable that, and I won't say this about anything else, so don't berate me on it, but this is the one area where Wizard World Chicago has a superior selection in that they probably have 10 times the amount of vendors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you can do, so Wizard World Chicago, you're going to be able to do a lot more digging, look through a lot more back issues. The cool thing about the vendor selection at San Diego, and obviously this is going to be something that we're going to notice a little bit more because certainly we're big into back issues and high dollar books and we appreciate the history of the medium. So when you have Midtown or one of these big companies that has these glass booths and here's an Action Comics number one, 5.5, or here's a, you know, Detective 27, or here's some
Amazing
original
Fantasy 15.
Exactly. Some big original, what did they have? There's a big Golden Age page that impressed the hell out of me. I think it was like a page from All Winners or something like that. Just amazing stuff that you look at this one glass booth and it's probably like $7 million worth of stuff just in this like 6-foot by 5-foot glass case. Mm-hmm. And that stuff is just incredible. And you see some of that at other shows, but not on this scale.
And not the density. Like it's not just that booth. It's the one next to it.
Right.
The one behind it for that small area, you know, like those 10 or 12 booths.
Well, they have the vendor section sort of laid out in an area where they concentrate the vendors that have the high dollar Golden Age and Silver Age stuff. They're all grouped into one area. And then the vendors that are selling, like a lot of the guys you'll see at Wizard World or C2E2, where they have just 6 or 7 or 8 tables of hot books, you know, for $10 a piece or something that are all laid out on a table. Those guys are all pretty much grouped together. And then the trade, half-off trade dealers are all kind of grouped together. And it's kind of nice how they do that. And it would be nice to see sort of groupings and layouts like that at Wizard World Chicago. But that's neither here nor there. That's the place that we spent the least amount of time. Yep. Did we see a lot of deals to be had at the vendor booths? Probably not.
Not today. We'll keep looking, but...
Yeah, admittedly, you got to think just like a lot of the big shows, the other vendors have gone through those booths long before we get in there.
And I would even say being a premier show, people can charge a premier price. They may not always get it, but there's a greater... I mean, 130,000 people. All you need is one.
Exactly. Well, a good example that we saw of a book that we have in the store right now. They had a 9.8... Amazing Spider-Man 361, which is the first appearance of Carnage. We have the same thing in our store for $250. and the, all of theirs were $500.
Right.
You know, and they're probably going to get it. Somebody will probably buy that book. Does it mean we're changing our price?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
Does it mean we're going to be astonished that they would price a book that high? Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we didn't spend a lot of time in the vendor section.
We did. So we got in. We kind of got to lay the land on the big major publishers in the booths, shot over to look at the vendor stuff really quick. Then we kind of hopscotched over everything else and went over to check out Artist Alley just to see what the layout is. So
yes.
When you're looking at the show, that middle section would be all the publishers and the big production companies. Star Wars was there, all that kind of stuff. And then if you were looking at it, so the vendors are to the right. To the left, the farther over you go, are more of the specialty artists, like Art Germ is one of them, Dave Dorman, kind of the J. Scott Campbell, so the bigger, more select artists. And then you go a little bit farther than that, and you get to the Artist Alley, which has, what would you say, probably about 50 between the front wall and then the Artist Alley, probably about 40 or 50 artists.
Probably more than that.
You think so?
Well, it's, so the, and again, the big difference for people that have been to C2E2 or to Wizard World Chicago, I had been told that the Artist Alley at San Diego was the biggest thing around. And it's not. I'm sure somebody can pull up some statistic to refute what I'm about to say, but I think it's small. It's the smallest Artist Alley between the three of the shows that I just named.
Size-wise,
but the big difference is when you go to Wizard World Chicago, the Artist Alley is going to be much bigger, but it's going to be a lot of people you've never heard of
mm-hmm.
selling prints that they stole off of DeviantArt for $25 a piece. Here, you've got none of that. It's Peter David and
Mike Mignola.
Right. I mean, you just get
Freddie Williams.
Yeah, you get all these people that Chris Burnham. I mean, all these people that you know, they're right there.
And they have very narrow tables. I mean,
right.
You don't get more than 6 feet.
Exactly.
And that's being generous by the time you get all your booth stuff in there.
So is it a smaller Artist Alley? Yes.
Square footage, yes, but it's so much more dense with top talent.
Right. It's like the concentrated best Artist Alley out of any of the shows that I've ever been to.
Right.
It's just there's nobody in there that you don't know. You know, you've at least heard of everybody. They're all at least published somehow or somewhere.
In a either a premier publisher or one of the in the back half of the previous publishers you would know of. They're not all just random names and people.
Exactly.
So
while we were there, of course, we knew he would be there,
mm-hmm.
but friend of Cowabunga Comics, Mr. Otis Frampton.
Yep, Mr. Otis Frampton. So for those of you that were down at the World's Smallest Comic Con, you saw him last year. You see our posts every once in a while about him. He's the creator of Oddly Normal. He's just, what a wonderful, wonderful guy. We happily checked in with him. He was getting all settled in, so we didn't want to take up too much of his time, but he was definitely excited. This is his one of his big shows of the year that he really looks forward to. So it was really nice to see him. He kind of gave us a few tips of the area, what to do.
Yep.
And actually, Otis's girlfriend, Kate, was there. It was the first time we got to meet her. Very, very nice and was very excited. And
I've been asking people in the lead up to San Diego to give me their advice, and anyone who's been there before. And of course, we were given some professional advice from Mr. Phil Hester, the great Phil Hester, when he was in our store. And he had a lot of great advice. And of course, you know, everything he said turned out to be exactly the case when we got out here. So thanks, Phil Hester, for your San Diego advice. I brought some darn comfortable shoes. And again, all the stuff that people have told us about San Diego, you've got this, you build it up in your mind and you think there's no way it's going to live up to it. It did.
And way more.
It did.
So, we're just talking before the show even opened, right?
Oh, yeah.
We haven't even gotten to what happens
exactly.
when it opens. So after we hop over to Artist Alley, we kind of wind our way back into the middle section because we knew that previews night, one of the biggest things, preview night,
mm-hmm.
one of the big things was people just rush everywhere to get con exclusives.
Yeah, well, that's another thing that Phil Hester had told us, was that the two busiest days of the show were Wednesday and Saturday. Wednesday because you get the dealers, the resellers that go in there and buy up all the exclusives, and it's a mad frenzy. It's It's a blood sport in there.
I think he was the one that kind of helped us figure it out, or maybe someone else told us. But basically, a lot of the reason that those guys are doing that is because they're looking to resell those exclusives to cover the cost of their badge because it's expensive.
That's what a lot of people try to do. But the majority of the people that are in there doing that, I don't know if I should say the majority, but I know obviously we are retailers.
Yep.
And we resell things to make money. But I talk to a lot of the guys that, when I'm at smaller conventions, I talk to a lot of the toy sellers, the toy dealers there who, some of them will do half of the revenue they make in a year off of selling San Diego exclusives. And one guy laid out that they'll go out there with like six guys. He will cover the cost for six guys to go out to San Diego. They get to go to San Diego, but in return, he gives them a bunch of money and he gives all of them sort of an itinerary of this day you're going to stand in these lines and you're going to pick these items up.
Right.
And so these guys plan this stuff out and make a tremendous amount of money reselling these exclusives. And I guess more power to them. It's the stuff's going to get sold regardless. But like we said, it can definitely turn into kind of a blood sport with people trying to get in line and trying to rush in. It's like, it looks like Black Friday a little bit with all the people that are,
does it ever,
rushing to a booth, pushing people out of the way. But you know, yeah, we stood in line. We had some of our loyal customers that gave us a list of stuff they wanted us to get for them, and
we did our best to try and cover it.
Yeah, I mean, we had one customer who gave us a list of like four things he wanted, and we're like, let's be realistic here. But we were able to get it all the first day.
Yeah, God bless, because we got in early. You know,
well, but the thing is,
there's a big catch to that.
There's a big catch. We got in early. But they didn't sell. No one sold to us earlier.
And you couldn't line up because
exactly.
You couldn't block any aisleways with the forklifts and all the people moving around. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was really, for us, it was you learn as you go, because mm-hmm. there was no time to stop and ask questions. But yeah, you're right. We were able to get all the things that the customers had asked for, which I think is great, because, you know, at the end of the day, this is an experience that, I don't know how frequently we're going to get to do this, but,
oh, yeah.
You know, but, to be able to bring some of that back is exciting.
But I think the people have an idea that this stuff is gone in about 3 minutes after the floor opens, a lot of these exclusives. And I'm sure that there's some sort of method to the madness of figuring out which items are going to be the ones that you want to get to right away. To give you an example, the Aspen booth was selling the Michael Turner Rebirth variants, Batman ones.
Right.
And some Justice League ones and an Amazing Spider-Man variant. And those are going for like $150 right now. They were putting up 20 a day.
Yep.
And they were limiting them to one per customer. So if you weren't one of the first 20 people in line,
you weren't getting Batman.
You weren't going to get that book. Now, on the other hand, Image has been pushing a lot of their exclusives, and we've had... That was one of the big things a lot of our customers asked if we could pick up for
them. The Negan Kills.
Right. Can you get us the Saga 2-pack figures, the Negan figures, some of the Negan covers of like Manifest Destiny and Thief of Thieves. And the whole day, we got them right away on mm-hmm. This first night. But when you'd walk past the Image booth 4 hours later, they still had tons, just mm-hmm. tons and tons and tons of them. So those weren't necessarily items that you had to stand in line for.
Yep.
So if you were somebody you're only coming for one day, try to prioritize what you think is going to be gone the fastest.
Right. And, you know, I think we did really good on that, because
mm-hmm.
we missed out on the Turner Batman variants today, mm-hmm. but we did get the ASM variants, which was cool, at the Aspen
booth. Yeah.
We went over to Image. We got the stuff you talked about. And then we also had noticed when we were doing our rounds that they had special con exclusive cover, Adam Hughes covers for the Betty and Veronica at the Archie booth.
Yes.
And we went up and we just kind of, you know, there was a big, I don't know, maybe what, 100 of them, 200 of them, something like that. It was a bigger stack, but that was all they had. And we asked the gentleman.
Well, before you go into that, just
okay,
a couple of the other retailers that we've talked to, or not retailers, but the sellers there, companies. Like Image has a San Diego exclusive Snot Girl comic,
yep.
number one. And they printed 500 copies of that, and they are putting out 100 a day. So with the at Sunday,
limit of one per
customer. So Sunday they're all going to be gone. The Aspen booth, as we said, they're only putting out 20 of those Batmans a day.
So 100 total.
Right. So most of these places, NECA's got a couple really cool exclusives that I geeked out at for myself. They've got a cloaked Predator. They've got a Newt figure from Aliens. They've got these arcade, like an arcade rendition of the Ninja Turtles from Turtles Through the Arcade Game, which is really cool. But they'll ration a certain amount out each day. What Eric's about to tell you about the Archie booth, they did not do that. So you go right ahead.
Yeah. So we talked to the gentleman that, I don't know if he's kind of their principal marketing guy or whatever he is. He seems to be running the booth and really nice guy.
Yeah.
Wish I would have gotten his name. But we just went up and asked him, before everything opened, just kind of said, you know, what's your plan with the Hughes variant covers and, you know, how does it work? And he said, they're here. There's no limit. I just want to sell them. They're gone. They're gone. And Adam will be here this afternoon to sign them if you get them.
From 7 to 8, he was signing.
Yeah, for an hour. And so we kind of filed that away and went, all right, see what we can do. So we did, we kind of prioritized. And I think the way that you prioritized it was there was a couple of NECA things that you needed to get. There was some image stuff. And then I wanted to try and do the Aspen thing. So we kind of divide and conquer. Hit right. NECA and Aspen. We met up, went to Image.
I got to have a Newt for my Aliens display.
You got your Newt. I'm very happy for you, Newt owner. Anyway, so
Rebecca Jordan.
We went to Image, met up there, got the few things that we needed for our customers there, and then thought, well, let's mosey ourselves on over to the Archie booth and see if they have any of those Hughes variants. Maybe we'll hang around and get one signed or whatever. Sure enough, they
plus one of our customers really wanted one too.
Right, and so they had them. So we picked up a handful of them. Thought, what the heck, let's take advantage of it and get them while we can. So we picked up a handful of them and, looked around, saw a few other things.
We got a Sonic Mega Drive book for another customer of ours.
We did. And, we also went past the heavy metal booth today and saw these really cool prints, these posters. We were like, wow, these are awesome. Didn't really know what it was all about. Go up to the booth and we were told, you buy this. And tomorrow, Grant Morrison will be here from 3 to 4 to sign them. If you get it, you're guaranteed to get it signed. And we have just this stack, and that's it. That's all that there are.
Well, they said that there would be two lines. There are people that bought posters, and then there will be the people that didn't buy posters.
The rest of
Grant Morrison.
The schnapps.
And so the people that bought posters would get priority. So we each wanted a poster for ourselves.
You're darn right.
Obviously. We got another poster for a friend of ours, and then we bought a fourth poster that may or may not make it into the shop. But we will see.
Yep.
That they're really cool. They have like a kind of a foil.
Yeah, they're iridescent. So
yeah.
We'll see Grant tomorrow, hopefully. But that was kind of our purchasing really for the night. We just kind of toured around and then we ended up going kind of back to Artist Alley and just kind of met up with a few artists and we can go through a little roundup of them, but was there anything else you wanted to, can I actually hit one thing before we? Okay,
yeah.
So in amongst all of this, you know that I went to the DC headquarters in Burbank, and Stuart Trek was wonderful enough to give me a 3-hour tour. So we wanted to go say hi to him and just kind of check in at the DC booth, and we learned that the person that we had originally in error called Aylin, her name is pronounced Aylin. But we saw her, and we saw Stuart, and we got to chat with Dan Didio for a couple of minutes and took a picture together with him. So talk about a guy that's he's never off. The off switch is never activated. This guy is on. He's always excited, full of energy. He must drink like Monster.
Dan Didio is a master showman.
And it's just a really nice guy, too.
Well, I don't mean that as a pejorative. He's great at what he does. I mean, he is... He's really the face of DC, and he represents himself incredibly
well. And the company very well.
Yeah. Well, and now the other thing that was really cool is talking to Stuart. He had this big clipboard, and he opens it up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we've been asking some questions about... But, I mean, obviously, we're here to have fun, but we also are here for business. And so we were talking about DC's plan, how moving on with Rebirth and for Young Animal, the Young Animal imprint. And we had mentioned that we were thrilled that Rebirth was not playing the incentive variant game. And he said that it's going to continue that way. And he said that Young Animal, the first couple of it, or the first issues of all the Young Animal line will have some incentive variants. But after that, it's probably not going to.
And DC itself, DC proper, the main superhero titles will remain tiered variant free.
Right. Now, the other thing that he told us that I was curious about, because all these number ones that are coming out, we mentioned that Aspen, Michael Turner, Batman, number one Rebirth cover. They're only allowing store exclusive variants for certain books. And it's only for the first issue. So you're not going to be getting, for variant cover completists, every issue of Batman is not going to have some store exclusive cover. It's only going to be the first issues. They said they're going to be very deliberate about the assigning of store exclusive variants to certain books. And there's going to be some first issues that aren't going to get any at all. But then what happened after we had talked about Young Animal was Stuart asked if we wanted to peruse kind of a proof he had of Doom Patrol number one and Cave Carson number one. And they both look fantastic. Take it from us. They look good.
I didn't really want to hand those pages back. I mean, it was just printed out on 8.5 by 11 regular paper, but I didn't really want to hand those back.
It looks good. They look like they're going to be really cool. And of course, Gerard Way will be there doing some signings at both the DC booth and the Dark Horse booth. But we probably won't be lucky enough to slip in.
That was another thing we did. We went over to the Dark Horse booth because one of your favorite bands is going to be in for a signing.
And Slayer!
They do a really interesting... So we don't know what Image is going to be like tomorrow when we have to get some wristbands, or Friday, depending on what we do. But Dark Horse, they do a lottery system. And they did a brief lottery Wednesday, for some of the stuff that they're doing Thursday and Friday. And it's, you go up, you get in this line, and then you dip your hand into a bag of beads. And if you pick out a red bead, right, you get your choice of what signing you want to go to.
Yeah, and they have a couple of them staggered. Like you said, Marvel and DC are doing it. There's a couple other companies that are doing it. Marvel and DC ones are pretty huge. Like with DC, it's a signed lottery system, and you could win. If you win this, you get to meet the entire cast of Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. So obviously, how cool would a Suicide Squad book signed by the entire cast be? You know, that would be awesome. But the DC one was a little more easygoing from what I imagine the Marvel and DC ones.
You mean the Dark Horse one?
The Dark Horse one, yeah, I'm sorry. But they had some really cool possibilities there for the signings. Obviously, Slayer and Gerard Way were mentioned. But some of the Serenity and Firefly casts are going to be there. Nathan Fillion's going to be there. Joss Whedon's going to be there. So those are some pretty big names. And at the Image booth, Max Landis is going to be there.
Yeah.
Who else?
Kirkman.
Robert Kirkman.
Brubaker.
Brubaker.
There's a few other folks, too.
Yeah.
We'll have to look tomorrow and see what the schedule
is. Well, the Wonder Woman cast for DC, they're going to be there, too. Gal Gadot, Chris Pine, and a couple of other people. Marvel is going to have the cast of Luke Cage, and I think the cast of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
There that you can meet, but either way, so the lottery system it's pretty neat. With Dark Horse, if you didn't pull a red bead, you pulled a black bead. You could keep trying until you pulled one, but you just have to go stand in the back of the line again, which kept growing and growing and growing and growing. So eventually, you know, like the third time you tried to get through, you're probably talking a 25-minute wait.
Yep.
So is it worth it? Yeah, if you get a B, it's worth it.
Yep.
But,
And? You got it.
Slayer! Slayer!
So you'll be going to see Slayer on Friday?
Yeah. Friday. So Slayer, Dark Horse told us that, for the people who have not heard this yet, if you're Slayer fans, Dark Horse is going to be putting out a 3-issue Slayer mini comic based on their newest album, Repentless. And, Eric Powell is doing the variant cover. Eric Powell is also at the show signing Of course, his new book, Hellbilly, is out. And so he's signing for that. And he'll be signing with Slayer at this Dark Horse booth. Slayer, the other cool thing is, because I'm pretty darn big thrash fan. So for those who don't know, Jeff Hanneman, he died several years ago. And he was one of Slayer's original guitarists. And Gary Holt from Exodus is now filling in. It's more of actually on a permanent basis with Slayer on guitar beside Kerry King. But he's one of the founding members of Exodus, who's another great thrash group. So I am going to try to get some Slayer stuff signed, and I'm going to see if I can get... The sad part is...
You weren't aware, so
I was, yeah,
you
I was
nothing
aware.
Right now.
I own all this stuff, first pressings on vinyl. I mean, I got Slayer's whole library going back to Show No Mercy and Haunting the Chapel. I got it all on vinyl at home. I got all of Exodus's early stuff, and it's all in Wisconsin. I don't have any
of it
with me.
California.
But that's okay. There's an Exodus comic that's is put out by the Rock and Roll Biography people. I don't remember the name of the company, so I'm going to try to get an Exodus comic for Gary Holt to sign and a Slayer comic for the whole band to sign. And they will be giving out posters of the Eric Powell variant for the Repentless comic that the whole band is going to sign. The album producer is there. He's going to sign it. Eric Powell is going to sign it. So that's going to be really exciting, and hopefully we'll be able to get a picture or two with Slayer.
I think that concludes all of the middle of the show stuff we did.
Yeah.
We hightailed it over to Artist Alley.
And of course, I've seen Slayer several times before, so you know.
We know you're excited.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm an old hat. I mean, my friend's Slayer.
James is very excited, if you can't tell. I'll hold his purse while he's getting stuff signed.
Good call.
All right, so we ended up kind of doing some of the exclusive stuff, met a few of our friends in the publishing business now, met up with a couple of new folks, and then we headed over to the Artist Alley to kind of just make the rounds and see who's there. And one of the first people that we ran into, obviously we saw Otis, which was great. Then ran into one of our store favorites, Dave Dorman.
Yep.
He was just in his regular Dave Dorman state, just a happy guy, putting out all of his awesome Star Wars work. He had some great Dark Knight 3 work. He had just gorgeous prints.
We always seem to run into Dave Dorman. He's setting stuff up. Like even at C2E2, like a couple
three
hours
into
after
the show, and he's still setting up.
So we always run into him when he's setting up. But Dave Dorman's he's a heck of a nice guy, and we hopefully will be having a cool announcement coming about Dave Dorman soon.
He's a man that runs on his own time schedule.
That's very true.
And at this point, he's earned it. Then we went a little bit farther down and met up with one of, I think, both of our favorite, one of our favorite artists, pencilers, inkers, Ed McGinnis. And he's sharing a booth right now with Mark Morales. Who,
also a heck of a nice guy, too.
Oh,
Ed McGinnis.
God, well, even Mark, both of them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And for those of you that aren't aware, these are the two guys that are doing the pencils and inking. So Ed's doing the pencils, Mark is doing the inking on Spider-Man Deadpool, so with Joe Kelly.
And Ed McGinnis, before that, he did the original Joe Kelly run on Deadpool.
Yep.
He did the Jeff Loeb run on Superman Batman. He's a name.
He's a legend at this point in the superhero side of things. So we stopped in, and boy, they got a heck of an agent or what manager, whatever he is. He's just a riot. He's 10 steps ahead of everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
So that was cool.
And he knows how to take, like, I felt kind of bad because Ed McGinnis, you could see he was in the middle of setting up, and he seemed just about as overwhelmed as we were with the first day of San Diego. And you're trying to get your an Ed McGinnis sketch in your sketchbook, and Ed McGinnis is like,
I can come back in a little bit.
And the guy's like, no. The guy's like, no. He's like, we'll take it. And Ed
so
McGinnis,
we're walking away from
yeah.
the booth and then coming back to the booth, and Ed's like, no, and we're like, no, and he's going, give us the money, sign on it, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, so we did it, and obviously it's cool that that Ed McGinnis, he, you know, trusts this guy enough and lets him just sort of, I guess, assign what he's going to be doing to him. But it worked out well for you, and he had it done in like 2 hours.
Less than that. I mean,
it
was amazing. And it's gorgeous. It's a beautiful Batman head sketch. It was great. So we did that. We kind of made our way back through a little bit more of the Artist Alley. Not all the artists were in. which was kind of interesting because on preview night, a lot of folks will fill up their sketch lists for the show. But
yeah,
and we didn't spend a lot of time. I mean, Katie Cook was there, who always has a line. She's a treat to get to see and
even
talk to.
Preview night before the show opens, she had a line.
Yeah, she had other artists lining up to get art from her for themselves. I mean, that's the kind of person she is. But if you follow her on Facebook or Twitter, she is an absolute riot. She's hilarious to talk to, and well, we'll see. We're hoping we're talking to her right now. We're hoping to get her into the store, but we'll see what we can do. So after we kind of walked past her, we kind of ended the night talking. Oh, we got two people left. We got this. So we ended up going and seeing Freddie Williams.
Oh yeah, really nice guy. I met him a couple of times before at Wizard World and once at C2E2, and he's always been incredibly friendly. He's a guy who he's very engaging. Whatever, you know, you go up to him, he'll start talking to you. He's even if he's in the middle of doing a commission or something, he is a really cool guy. He wants to talk to his fans.
Yeah, and we talked for probably a good 20 minutes or so.
Oh, yeah.
About so the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Batman IDW DC crossover miniseries. He did the covers for those were gorgeous, and he had the original.
Well, he did all the art.
Yeah, he did all the art, but those covers were. Oh. Mm-hmm. And he had some of the original art there. Yeah, that was awesome. And, you know, you were talking to him a little bit about his influences and how the respect that he had for Kevin Eastman and how this is kind of like a dream come true for him.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. So we talked to him for a little while, and I'm sure we'll round back and see him. We have one more person on the list that we forgot. The man with the coolest glasses in San Diego.
Absolutely. And a very friendly guy. I didn't know he was going to be there, and we expected him to have a line, and he didn't have a line. It was Art Germ was there, and he, of course, is just an incredible artist. He was a really cool guy. He had these really cool glasses
that we
asked him where he got them, and he said Singapore, and it reminded me of that Seinfeld episode where Kramer is trying to get the, or was it George is trying to get the glasses from Elaine's boyfriend, who's a writer, and he said he got them in Singapore. Kind of a non sequitur, but anyway, he was just a heck of a nice guy. Yeah. We bought some prints from him, and we got a picture of him with the cow. So
and he thought that was the coolest thing. He was playing and bouncing his head, and let me tell you, that cow made his way around. If you've been watching our Facebook page, you'll see that cow was everywhere, and everyone so far that's seen him thought it was one of the coolest things, so that was kind of neat.
So, yeah, Art Germ was really cool, and he's obviously, I think, Art Germ in the next couple of years, he's going to be, when people talk about the big, hot cover artists, it's Adam Hughes and J. Scott Campbell, and we'll touch on one of them in a minute, but I think Art Germ's going to be he's going to be right up there soon. Yep. I mean, the guys, he knows what people want, and he sells books with his covers.
Yeah, and the other one you mentioned was J. Scott Campbell, who wasn't at his booth today, but we'll round up tomorrow, and maybe we'll get a chance to have an audience with the master.
Well, and Adam Hughes.
Yep. So we did see Adam Hughes.
So we got the Betty and Veronica books, and then we circled back later, and we were the first people in line for Adam Hughes, who was a very nice guy, very humble. And he signed our books for us, and we talked to him for a little while. Of course, the line grew very quickly.
Yeah.
So we couldn't just stand around talking to Adam Hughes all day as much as we wanted to. But that was really cool. So for the guy who wanted us to get him the Betty and Veronica Hughes variant, it is now signed.
You got it. So that was pretty much, that was pretty much our first day. We left after that, grabbed some dinner, and hightailed it back out to the house here. And now we're...
The waitress at the place that we went for dinner guessed right away that we were Midwestern.
Yeah.
I don't think we really have Midwestern...
There's no accent.
Accents, but which is sometimes a giveaway. But she said it was because of how friendly we were that she thought we were from the Midwest. So, well, that's a good thing, because we're both kind of like, you know, we can be cynical SOPs. So good to know that somebody from California thinks we're friendly.
We can have heavy opinions when we want to.
Yeah.
But no, it's been an amazing day. think it's time to call it a night, though. I'm pretty beat.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I do want to throw one thing out there. We owe a debt of gratitude to John Mayo, who is one of our podcasting friends. He's over on the Mayo Report at Comic Book Page. We kind of rang him up a few days before I left to come out to San Diego and just kind of asked. He's been to Comic-Con out here for 20-some years. So we just kind of said, hey, can you give us a rundown of what to expect? Obviously, we didn't know or expect to get in early today, but he kind of walked us through the layout. He said, you're never going to know. You're not going to be able to get the concept of the size and scale until you're there. But he kind of did a really nice job of walking us through and telling us, you know, if you want certain things, this is kind of how you want to look at it, approach it, and figure it out. So, you know, John, thank you for taking that half hour the other night to give us a rundown. It really did help us. And if anyone out there, I mean, obviously this is day one, so we don't know what the rest of this is going to have in store. But if anyone out there ever does consider going to San Diego Comic-Con, I would recommend reaching out to people to figure out what it's like if you know someone that's been there. Because so far with what Phil told us, with what Otis told us, and with what John told us, it's at least armed us with the ability to survive through day one.
Or just keep these loaded on your iPod or whatever and listen to them leading up to the show. Because I'm sure we will have a lot more feedback and advice from the perspective of a first-time attendee over the next couple of days.
So for James and myself, Eric, we are going to sign off, catch some Z's, and we'll be back with another recording for you tomorrow.
Welcome to the Cowcast, day two of our San Diego coverage, where it is hot, stifling hot. Let's kick it off after yesterday. I am James.
I am Eric.
And we may be hot, but so is the con. It's going, I mean, it's incredible. Day two, phenomenal. Although, from what I've seen, it's actually hotter in Wisconsin right now. So
yeah, so I guess we'll be... We're thankful that it's only kind of hot here.
Yeah.
Before we get too deep in, day two is done. I feel like we've been here for 4 days already.
It's amazing. It's just, it's pure insanity.
Huge.
But in
big,
a good way.
Colossal. Massive.
Yes. Yes. Obviously, yesterday we talked about our initial impressions of the con, how the floor is laid out. Today we got a little bit more into it. We spent time getting to know more professionals, getting to know people from the publishing side of things.
And that's all for you, the listeners, the customers, because what we're trying to do is set up relationships that can help us get new things in the store before they may be in other places, get access to people that can get into the store.
Oh,
I mean,
certainly.
It's what we're trying to do is set up a network of professionals in the publishing world, in the creative world, that can only help us bring more awesome things to you.
Absolutely. We were able to get in a little bit early. And
we're not going to ask why or how.
We're not going to ask questions. We're just going to roll with it.
Yep.
So that was really cool. We were able to get our Aspen Batman book.
Finally. Finally.
And the Aspen people were really nice. And we talked to a... one of the San Diego Comic-Con volunteers for a while. She was pretty nice. She's from Alaska, and we were talking about...
Moving to Chicago.
Right. So we had a nice long conversation while we were waiting for the Aspen booth to open up. It wasn't about comics, and we got our Batman books.
Me.
Had a very specific thing you were also looking for, right? You were looking for another of the Snot Girl books?
Oh, yeah. So those Snot Girl books, you know, those... I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's not a title that I was initially drawn to, but knowing that we had those convention exclusives available to us, I wanted to pick one up for myself. And since we had a limit of one per person, we thought, well, why don't we go get a couple that we can have in the store?
Yep.
So, good news. When we come back, there might be some Snot Girl on the shelves.
And again, yesterday I talked about that a lot of people rushing over to grab the Saga figures, which were there all day.
All
the Walking
day.
Dead
they were
Negan
there all
figures
day again
there
today.
All day. The Bats were there all day. The Lucilles. But the Snack Girl books were gone in 30 minutes, if that.
Right.
So that's another one of those things where, you know, prioritize what you think is going to go quickly and pounce on it.
I will say, though, it does help if you have a multi-day pass because you can get just a single-day badge.
Yeah.
So some of those people may have just run there with a single-day badge. We don't know. We're not looking at people's badges.
Mm-hmm.
But
we don't need no sinking badges.
Well, we do.
Well, yeah.
But absolutely. We were able to get the con-exclusive Snack Girl, so we can have a couple of those in the store for folks. Mm-hmm.
So do you want to maybe start off in order of some of the really, really cool people that we met?
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's the one thing about San Diego that it holds over any other major convention that I've been to is the pure quality of creators and creative people and content that are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we started the day, actually what we did at the start of the day after we went to Image was we kind of went around to figure out who was signing where. I brought a few books out. You brought a few things out that we thought, you know, if we can, we'll get signed. Because we have the multi-day pass, because we got in early, we were able to kind of figure that out. So the first group of folks that we got in line.
Yeah, we kind of did dry runs of.
Yeah, we're like, going here.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going over here.
We're like 30 minutes before the floor opens. Again, we're not really going to be standing in line for exclusives yet because they won't let you. But we were kind of doing our dry runs like from here to this booth to that booth. It's going to take us this long. And so we kind of had it down when the floor opened. So
we got all our stuff. Our ducks were in a row. And we had one signing at the beginning of the day that we wanted to get to. We actually only had two that were scheduled things that we wanted to hit.
Yeah.
First,
we went to NECA.
Right. After Image, we went to NECA.
Right. Because they had, I mentioned yesterday, those really cool TMNT arcade-style figures. So I picked up one of those to take to a signing at the IDW booth.
Right.
Which is what you're going to go into.
I was going to let you go. You were
in there. Oh, I would love to.
I'll tag on at the end.
So go to the IDW booth, and there is a San Diego exclusive cover of issue 60 of the IDW ongoing Ninja Turtles series with a collaborative cover by Freddie Williams and Kevin Eastman. So they were there both at the IDW booth signing that. And you also had a couple of other guys that work on the book. One of the writers that was there. One of the interior artists that was there. And so you basically had the entire creative team signing that book. And of course, Kevin Eastman, anything Ninja Turtles, you want him to sign it. And
what a nice guy.
Oh, he was incredibly awesome.
Yeah.
So we went through, we got in that line pretty early. All those guys were nice. I mean, Freddie Williams is probably one of the nicest people you'll meet in comics.
Oh, yeah.
So he was really great. But Kevin Eastman was, the guy's a legend. I've been reading Ninja Turtle comics since the 80s. And, this is the first time I've met him. And it was really cool because we've been bringing, the Incredicow really has been bringing us with him.
Yeah, he is on one hell of a trip. And it is hard to keep up with that little dude.
So we went, we got all that stuff signed. Kevin Eastman signed our San Diego exclusive Turtles figures, which is really cool. But then we got the entire creative team to sign that San Diego exclusive cover, which was really cool. And I brought a Turtles sketch cover, and Kevin Eastman drew a Ninja Turtle head for me. So that was...
Yep, and he did the same for my daughter, which I've long said that my daughter's going to have a better art collection. She's already at 2 years old. She has a Jim Lee original Wonder Woman. She's got a Kevin Eastman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
If you would have just named your daughter Eric, you could just get all the personalized and then hand it down.
So you went through, we kind of went through together with the group. Yeah. And when we got to Kevin, after he signed a few things and whatnot, we said, you know, we have a shop and it happens to be Cowabunga Comics. And he thought that was a riot at first. And then we showed, you know, Incredicow said, what about me? Quit hogging the limelight. And he saw the cow and he thought that was the coolest thing in the world. So he, you know, wanted to take a picture with the cow. And, you know, the cow was a little selfish. He wanted some one-on-one time. And he asked. And Mr. Eastman was nice enough to sign the Incredicow. So we have a Cowabunga Comics Kevin Eastman signed cow, which was, I think, one of the highlights of the Incredicow's trip so far. He still has a few days to go, but he really was all over that.
Yeah, that was a really cool thing. You want to touch on the next one?
Well, yeah. So after that, the next signing that we had kind of that had a scheduled time that we wanted to do was the Grant Morrison thing that we talked about yesterday. So we kind of, again, let's start going through meeting some more professional folks. Let's get in touch with some artists. And one of the folks that we wanted to see and what we're walking towards and got to meet was Marjorie Liu.
Yep.
From Monstrous. Very delightful person, just mm-hmm. all smiles, so happy that, you know, people love what she's doing. A UW-Wisconsin grad.
Well, we didn't follow up, and we should have, because we're stupid.
Yeah.
But we mentioned we were from Wisconsin, and she got very excited. And it was sort of towards the end of our conversation, so when we walked, we were like, darn it, why didn't we ask why she got excited about Wisconsin? And we looked her up, and her alma mater is the University of Wisconsin.
She got
in Madison.
Yep.
So we're gonna have to go back and tell her next time she goes back to her alma mater, which is not in China.
Right. You know, yeah.
Or lecturing at MIT.
Yeah.
That she should stop by the shop.
So you want to talk about a smart person. Yeah. So she's got her undergrad from Madison. She's got, I think, another degree from another university. I believe she's originally born in Seattle. She's living part-time in Beijing right now. Guest lecturing at MIT. Oh, and she's creating comics at the same time. So
yeah.
This woman is quite a force. And one of the nicest people. We told her, of course, we had our store. She got to spend her quality time with the Incredicow. And for all of you that are listening, she sent home a bunch of buttons with us to help promote Monstrous.
Yeah.
So those will be out and at the shop.
Well, she asked if we wanted to take some pins for the shop, and we said sure. And we, you know, we thought we'd take five or six. And she reaches in and she keeps taking handfuls out of this bag, and she must have pushed like 50 pins at us.
Yep.
So she was super nice, and yeah, and it was great meeting her. And obviously, Monstrous is a really cool book.
And if you haven't picked it up, I think we have a reorder in for a couple of issues. But let us know if you haven't and you want it. The hardcover is out.
Yeah.
The trade is out. So let us know. It is a phenomenal book.
Mm-hmm.
So I think after that, we were kind of milling around to figure out what the heck we were going to do next. Friday, tomorrow, is going to be hectic for us with folks that we want to kind of catch up with. But right before lunch, we thought, let's take one more spin through. You wanted to go to the Shout Factory to check out the signing time for tomorrow.
Yep, which is one of my favorite movies, Return of the Living Dead. They're going to have two of the actors there, the guy that played Chuck and the guy that played Freddy. And Shout Factory is, they put out Blu-rays of, I mean, whoever they have handpicking the movies that they're re-releasing, they must just be pulling them off of my shelf at home. Because they've got some amazing selections. And to kind of push this release of this Blu-ray collector's edition, they have those guys there. So they're also handing out a poster, Return of the Living Dead poster, with sort of new painted art, which is really cool. Sort of an 80s style, like a Drew Struzan style painting. So I'm going to get that signed. So I was really excited about that. They've also got the cast of the new MST3K that's going to be there on Saturday. And that's pretty cool. I mean, we're going to try to get some pictures taken with Tom Servo and Crow if we're able to, because that would be pretty neat.
But while we were there,
no Mike Nelson, unfortunately.
Yeah.
He's my favorite, obviously. But I would love to. I'd love to meet Mike Nelson, but no Mike Nelson there. But that's okay. And while we were there,
they were, Gail Simone was there. They were doing some promotions for some of the new, Red Sonja stuff that's coming out. And we had a real lovely chat with her talking about her making the shift off of Red Sonja, switching over to Marguerite Bennett,
mm-hmm.
You know, and how the tone has really stayed consistent throughout. Gail's just she's such a lovely lady to talk to.
We
talked to her at
C2E2.
She remembers
us from C2E2.
Because we had, you know, Credicow was with us. So that was a really nice little chat. And just as we were getting ready to leave, Mr. Paul Dini walks into the booth,
mm-hmm.
Whose wife happened to be there as part of the Red Sonja stuff. And we were able, and he was gracious enough to give us a couple of minutes just to chat about his book, The Dark Knight, which you and I both have read. I know we've had a couple of our customers that picked it up and absolutely loved it. If you haven't, this is a must-have. This is a book that I think anyone in and out of comics can read and really enjoy. But we talked to him. Obviously, for those of you that don't know, Paul Dini was part of the group that brought us the Batman animated series.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is a legend in the comics and animated world. So he was phenomenal.
The reason he stopped by there was because his wife, Misty Lee, was part of the signing for the Red Sonja Blu-ray.
Right. So he was there. He took his picture with Incredicow.
Yep.
Which he loved. He was shaking and bobbling him and having a great time.
Very nice guy.
And then after that, it was time for lunch. We walked up and down the hall two or three times just taking in all the different cosplay. A lot of different. You had all the anime folks. You had a lot of Harley Quinns and Poison Ivies and a couple of Jared Leto Jokers.
It is... I don't have any real problem with it other than the occasional annoyance, but if you're somebody that doesn't react all that well to crowds, you don't want to be here because you'll run into some bottlenecks where it is just complete gridlock.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they have, if there is a queue to a large panel or a larger event, sometimes they get these guys that come out with this like 5 foot high, green fencing.
Snow fence.
Yeah. And they'll get two guys and they'll block off both sides of a hallway.
It's literally like herding cattle.
Right, and you can't get through. And what they'll do is they'll have that opened up, and then whoever's in the queue to like get into something in Hall H, they'll start letting those people in. Well, it can take 10 minutes as they let these people in, so you're just stuck there. You can't go anywhere. And then, you know, that kind of thing, whatever, you have a little patience, but it can get a little annoying if you're in a hurry to get somewhere, if there's a signing or a panel that you're trying to get to, and now you're just kind of stuck.
Yep.
There are a lot of people there.
It does help to be 6'4" and a healthy Wisconsinite, because a lot of people tend to bounce off of you at this convention. You're just kind of... So...
When you're 5'11", that's not quite as...
You tend to just follow me, which works out well.
Yeah, I let you knock people over.
So we went out and had lunch, and we were...
I was going to say, it's as bad as it is in the convention center. As we mentioned in the last podcast, San Diego itself is transformed by the convention. And there are shows going on out on the street. I mean, you have like guerrilla marketing that is done, guerrilla advertising, where we mentioned that the trams have... this giant advertisement is posted on them for some new Exorcist TV show. Well, they have guys that are paid to go out, and they have some makeup on, and all of a sudden they'll be in the middle of a crowd and they'll start like convulsing, throwing up, and they'll get somebody who's a contortionist or something, and he'll start twisting his arm behind his head, and these guys that are dressed as priests will come out and perform an exorcism live on the street. I think eventually somebody's going to get shot or something, but. It's interesting. Just walking around the streets, you know, we're talking 6-7 blocks away from the convention center. There is stuff going on everywhere.
And I will say this.
Yeah.
We are not sponsored by anyone because this is our own show, but I will plug Uber. We've used Uber already twice, I think, once or twice. But the number of people handing out those stupid Lyft cards to me, it just is so annoying that I will not use Lyft. Well, we are out here specifically, so...
No, if Uber wants to give us some free rides...
Yeah, we'll take free rides from Uber, but, I mean, it is. It's like you said, it's guerrilla marketing. It's not just the acts and stuff, but everyone wants to hand you cards and crap, and just don't take it. Just
again,
move past.
Yeah, again, it's worse than... If you've ever been to Wizard World, if you've ever been to C2E2, you know how people are handing out... somebody's having some signing at a bowling alley in 3 months, and they're handing you some... A card for that. It's times 10 here, you know, times 100. So you have to ignore people. You have to be willing to... Streets are closed off.
Yep, a couple of those downtown streets are closed off.
And there are just people everywhere. And I had mentioned that they'll block off the... When they open some of the queues, look at the green fencing. It's very much the same out in the streets, because a lot of times you'll just be walking around and all of a sudden... There's some makeshift parade that starts with a bunch of, you know, and then you got to get the hell out of the way, and You got to get off, you know, this part of the sidewalk because this parade is coming through. It just comes out of nowhere. It's not like there's a schedule for this kind of thing. So there's all sorts of stuff going on all the time. There's one part when we were trying to leave the convention to get to the Gaslamp District, and a train, not a tram, but an actual train happened for whatever reason to just stop right on the tracks in front of the convention center.
Switching tracks or something? I don't know.
Yeah, and then you're just boom, there it is.
Sits there because the convention center is, you've got to cross all of both the light rail and the industrial train tracks to get to the Gaslamp District, to the parking, to everything. So here you are, you and your 40,000 closest friends just sitting there waiting for a train.
So there are plenty of crowds. And again, we mentioned yesterday that there are plenty of beggars, plenty of people that are holding signs that say
disabled vet,
you know, or disabled vet. And please give me your con badge for a day.
And that's not to diminish. There could be some that truly are, but we're not playing the game.
Exactly. Anyways, I guess the biggest point is there's nowhere that you can really go to escape the masses when you're here. Just be ready for 5 days of having people walk into you, having people
stop right in front of you.
Stop right in front of you when they're Pokemon Go is everywhere out here, and you will have people that are stopping right in the middle of the main thoroughfares at the convention, and you look on their phone and they've just stopped, maybe a group of three or four of them, because they're playing Pokemon Go. I have nothing against Pokemon Go. But if you're going to stop in the middle of the main aisle at Comic-Con,
you will get run over.
You're going to get run over. So you just expect it. That being said, another comment along those same lines. One thing that I thought of when we were carrying our stuff downtown was because of you have so many people carrying these big bags. So many booths give out, IDW will give out bags. Just about everybody's giving out these huge, huge bags with big handles. And you're getting tons of stuff. People are walking around with big toys sticking out of the bags, and so you'd think that there would be. I mean, I'm a paranoid Wisconsinite, I guess, and so I was just like eyeing everybody, expecting that we're gonna get into a big group when the tram stops, and somebody's gonna try to reach in and steal like my Turtles figure that's sticking out. I didn't have any issues, and I haven't heard of anyone that's had any issues with theft yet. I'm sure it exists, but for the most part, everyone out here seems to be very, very friendly, and everybody's just really here to have a good time, you know?
Yeah, and I think that is one thing that's been impressive is, you know, there's police presence, and I think that's more to make sure that the convention goers are safe, not to protect anyone from convention goers.
Yeah.
They do a good job of keeping people moving, don't stop on the sidewalks outside, you know, whatever, which actually wasn't that bad. When we took a break for lunch, we had to wait for the train. And we got across, and we found, what was it, Gaslamp Barbecue, I think was
what it was. Oh, that was great.
Of course, you got two newbies here. We're not looking for a five-course sit-down meal. We just want to get some food, get some energy, and get back into the show. So we ended up getting barbecue.
And try to find a bathroom that doesn't have a line 80 people long, too.
Yeah. Good luck. Hold it. It's about the
only recourse. No liquids the entire day.
The only recourse you have is hold it. But no, so we had our lunch, and then we went back into the convention and decided, you know what, let's peruse again a little bit more. So we walked around, and I think we went over, and we did actually spend some time in the vendor area this afternoon after lunch, taking in some of those high-dollar books. We knew that we had a 3 o'clock signing that Graham Morrison was going to be at that we didn't want to miss.
Oh, we picked up J. Scott Campbell variants.
Yep.
Of Betty and Veronica as well.
Yep.
Because we couldn't get them Wednesday. They weren't at the show yet. But he first had them on Thursday. So we went over and we picked up. We were only able to get one of each. But we got them.
Yep.
It's pretty cool.
So then we went. Yeah, we just kind of went over to the vendor area and moved around for a little bit there and looked at stuff. And then we went over to get in line for Graham Morrison. Now, being the Wisconsinites that we are, and Midwesterners, tend to be more like if we say meet at 6, it means we're there at 5:45. So
unless you're my wife,
oh,
who keeps her own kind of time.
Okay. Or Dave Dorman.
Yeah.
He's Dave Dorman time. But you know, we were just kind of like, you know, we don't want to miss this. We don't know what's going on. So we get to the heavy metal booth where Grant's going to be It's like 30, 35 minutes early.
And everybody at the heavy metal booth thus far had been incredibly friendly.
Like, oh my gosh.
Like really yes. cool. You could walk up to any of those people and just talk to them for like 15 minutes.
About anything. Didn't yeah. even have to be heavy
yeah,
metal
they're
related.
Awesome. They're really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think they were there obviously to work, but half of what they were doing is just people watching like the
and
rest of us.
One of the other people that was at the heavy metal booth, obviously that's been a long, heavy metals magazine's been going since the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Kirby, I'm sure everybody's seen, what the hell was the name of the movie with that Ben Affleck did? Argo?
Yep.
Okay. Remember how they were making a fake movie in Argo to try to get in to get everybody out? There's a guy named Barry Geller.
Yep.
Who, if you don't know, and you're a comic fan, you've seen Argo. The guy they brought in to draw the storyboards for this fake movie that the CIA was never really going to make was Jack Kirby. And he did those with a guy named Barry Geller. And he's there at the heavy metal booth. And he's got a lot of, not the original pages, but a lot of these limited edition prints of that Lord of the Light.
And I was overhearing him talk, and there was a couple of them that they only had like three or four left of, that only 25 were printed. And they were high-dollar prints to get.
Oh, I believe
they were between $500 and $1,000. And very... I mean, they were big. They were not tiny little prints. They were pretty good
yeah,
size.
Yeah, they're huge.
But, boy, it was so funny because Barry was obviously very proud of his work. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, an older guy on a smartphone. And he's trying to share pictures of this with, I don't know, family or friends or whatever. But he's kind of like just bouncing all over the booth trying to get good pictures of this work that he's done and being able to share it with people. And anyone that would come up to look at it, he would say, oh yeah, Jack did this and then we did that. And it was fun just to sit and
yeah.
listen.
Look up the Lord of the Light, or Lord of Light, I'm sorry, Lord of Light pictures that Jack Kirby did with Barry Geller. And again, if you know anything, you've seen Argo and you don't know that backstory to it, it's really cool to see that bit of history. I was a little disappointed that Jack Kirby never got a shout out in that movie.
Yeah.
But anyways, so we want to go back to
yeah.
your...
So we get over there. Again, we're about a half hour early. No one else has lined up yet. We just kind of thought we don't want to miss our chance. One of the folks at the booth was like, yeah, there's no one here. And we're like, well, I guess we'll just kill time then. And they're like, well... Would you give me a cup of coffee? I could really use a cup of coffee or green tea, I think it was. I don't know. And we said, sure. So we went
and
out.
To her credit, she asked if she could buy us
that's
coffee.
Right.
Tea.
And
we said
no, thank you.
Because we're nice Midwesterners.
But, you know, you think a line for a bathroom is long? Try getting in the line for Starbucks.
Yeah, they have. There's probably at least four Starbucks inside the convention center. And some of them are these. Like movable, they're mobile Starbucks carts, and they don't have the full menu selection that a Starbucks does. But for whatever reason, halfway through the day, they close the carts down, and then the actual Starbucks line is like 40 people long.
Easily. Oh. But so we got in the line for Starbucks, and to their credit, they must have figured out the optimal way to get through the line, because within like less than 15 minutes, we got our order in, got the coffee drink, and went
mm-hmm.
back, and... Of course, when we got back, there was a nice, healthy line waiting for
yeah.
Grant. And we were guaranteed our positions at the front of the line, which was nice. So we jumped back in the front of the line. And about 10 minutes later, here he comes.
Well, Grant Morrison was, what, about 10 minutes late?
Something like
so
that.
It was funny because we're all talking. We're like, do you think he's just going to show up in like a puff of smoke?
Yeah.
Or he'll just be seated already?
We're going to go into some Grant Morrison like... tripped out LSD type dimension
yeah.
for like 30 seconds and then he's going to appear in front of us. But yeah, so he showed up and again, you know, you never know with the creators, or I guess some people be like sports stars or celebrities where you kind of paint a picture of someone and they may be larger than life. And when you meet them, you're let down because of the way they act. And that was definitely not the case with Grant. I honestly didn't know what to expect just because his writing is kind of all over the place, depending on what he's doing and what he's trying to convey. But just a very kind of soft spoken, but very, very nice, very comfortable to talk to.
Yeah.
Very appreciative of anyone who appreciates his work and can speak to him about his work.
About everyone, really?
Right. So we made our way through, and Credit Kyle had his audience with Grant. And one of the things that we did was, hearing that Grant was going to be there, we thought, well, shoot, you know, Claus has been a great book for us. It's got gorgeous Dan Mora art inside and a wonderful story. So we thought, let's snag a couple of copies. Boom had a few of the first prints of the first issue. So we went over, we got a couple of those before the signing, and Grant was more than happy to sign them. And then he said, you know, Dan's here over at the Boom booth tomorrow. Maybe you guys want to go over there. So we'll see. Maybe we can see Dan. I don't know. But he was great. So I kind of moved through, and Credit Kyle had his audience and moved through. And then James, you got to talk to him about something a little unique.
Yeah, I get, well, it was super cool because it was, I mean, it's Grant Morrison, you know, and to us, he's like a rock star of the comic world. And he was just the most easygoing guy. And we had, he was talking about how he lived in LA for a couple months out of the year. And then he goes back to Scotland, and I mentioned that I was from Wisconsin, and we were talking about, you know, the differences and similarities between Wisconsin and Scotland living, and how we both kind of appreciated rural life versus city life. And Grant Morrison was telling me a story about how he's got this seagull now that comes to the door or comes to his window every day, and he's been feeding this seagull like breadcrumbs and scraps and stuff, and it's become like a member of the family and stuff. And it was just, we had this kind of surreal conversation with Grant Morrison about all these, just these funny little things about rural life. So it was pretty cool. I mean, honestly, he was even cooler than I could have imagined. It was Grant Morrison, and I walked away. I didn't walk away starstruck, which is a good thing. I walked away thinking like, well, he's, you know,
even better than I imagined.
Yeah, yeah. It's Grant Morrison. I'm going to double my orders for his books now, you know.
So if any of you have an opportunity, he does some prose books, and he does get around for some signings for those, depending on where he's at. But if you're ever in an area where you have an opportunity to go to a Grant Morrison signing, it's worth, I would have stood in line for an hour to get that chance to talk to him. So it's definitely worth it.
And if you want to mix both of our experiences together today, there's a Saturday signing at the Heavy Metal booth with Grant Morrison and Kevin Eastman. So there you go.
So that was really, our big afternoon keystone that we had to hit.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we decided let's hit the floor some more and kind of get around to different areas. Again, when we went to J. Scott Campbell at the beginning of the day to get those variant covers that James talked about, he wasn't at his booth. The guy is in demand. He was in a couple of panels already. He had done a couple of signings, I think, at Marvel? I don't know. He was kind of moving around doing different things.
Yeah, I don't know where you've been.
Who knows? Maybe the guy just wanted to get some fresh air. But we got back in the afternoon, and he was there. So we had an opportunity just to go up and quick say hi. The Incredicale got his picture taken again. Again, very nice, very appreciative of everything. Very busy at his booth, which was great. So we just kind of said hi and you know, thanked him for all his work and moved along. And I think that's a big thing, too, that I want to point out. If you are going to a convention and you want to meet a creator, always try and thank them for what they do, because you know, without them, we wouldn't have this industry. Mm-hmm. So just being appreciative of their work definitely goes a long way.
Well, and this is going to sound weird or arrogant maybe, but I mean, I've met a lot of these famous people, you know, both in comics and in music and even some TV and movie people before. And they're people like you and I, with two exceptions, and I won't name names, who definitely thought they were God's gift to man. Everybody just wants to have, they want to be treated like a normal person.
Yeah.
These people all really do. And some of the conversations that I've had with people, that they like it when you don't come up and just worship their work. Tell them that you enjoy them, what they do, like Eric said, but don't just sit there and gush, because they get that all the time, you know, and you're more likely to get, just talk to them, you know, talk to them about something. As an example, one of my favorite artists is Mark A. Nelson, just because of a lot of the Alien stuff that he's done. And when I met him a couple of years ago, we talked about aliens and his Dark Horse stuff for a few minutes. And then I just mentioned Joe R. Lansdale, because he did a small book with Joe R. Lansdale. And he said, "You're a big Joe R. Lansdale fan?" I said, "Yeah, of course. I'm a huge fan of his." And he perked up, and we talked about that for 30 minutes, maybe. And he loved it. And he had told me at first he wasn't doing sketches, you know. And then while we're talking about Joe R. Lansdale and somebody, you know, a completely different creator's work and how we really love his books, he grabbed my Aliens book and he opened it up to the first page and started drawing an alien for me. And so, again, talk to these people like they're humans. Engage them in their interests, and it's going to be rewarding. I don't even mean rewarding like you're going to get something, but it's rewarding because you're going to have a chance to talk to them. What can they really say when you just walk up to them and all you say is, "Man, you're my favorite artist. I love this. I love that. I love it."
All they can say is thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, move on and engage them. They're going to want to have a conversation.
So kind of similar to that, I lucked out with Grant Morrison. Because I have a sketchbook that I've been trying to do a little bit of filling and getting some signatures in it. And I just asked if he would sign it. And not only did he sign it, he sketched a Batman head in it for me.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Which that was completely unexpected and totally amazing.
So you have your first page of your sketchbook
is an Ed McGuinness Batman.
And the last page of your sketchbook
is a Grant Morrison Batman.
Yeah.
Which is, who cares about the pages in between?
Well,
but
pretty impressive stuff going on in there too.
We also, at that point, kind of moved around, did a few different things, met a few more creators. Mark Brooks, who's doing the art on Han Solo.
Yeah, man, that guy is an up-and-coming star. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, just watched him work for a little bit. And Credico got his picture taken. Wonderful guy. Another one of those great ones. Also happened to see Art Adams, comic legend, who was hanging out at his table. And so, again, you know, one of those things, took sketchbook up to him, said, "Would you mind signing this?" And he signed it, and he did a little self-portrait of himself in there, which was pretty hysterical.
And he even, after he did it, he joked that he drew Keith Giffen, which, look up
Keith Giffen
and look up Art Adams, and you'll
see why.
After that, I certainly made a good score. Neil Adams is set up there.
Yes.
And he's got a big old booth. And next to Neil Adams...
Well, tell him how we got...
Well, you saw somebody at a booth drawing some King of the Hill characters.
Hank Hill head sketches. And
God dang it.
Somebody here loves King of the Hill.
I love propane. I'm a huge King of the Hill fan, one of my favorite shows. You probably have, if you've been in the store ever, you probably have been in at one of the times where I've had King of the Hill on. Or you've heard Mike and I quoting King of the Hill. I don't know, maybe you haven't. But the fact of the matter is, I love King of the Hill. And I see this guy drawing, Hank Hill in King of the Hill pictures. And I went up and I said, "I love King of the Hill. I see you're drawing King of the Hill stuff right there." And he said, "Oh yeah, I worked on the show." And
yeah, he did. He was the
character designer. Obviously, yeah. Mike Judge came up
creator.
With it. He's the creator, and he, you know, did the voices of Hank Hill. And there's the sort of the genesis of Hank Hill in Beavis and Butthead. But this guy did the character designs for the show. And so I said, "Well, I would love a Hank Hill sketch," and Hank Hill going, "Whoa!" And he said, "Yeah, come back in like 20 minutes. So we went and walked around a little bit and came back, and I had him sign it over, personalize it to me. And then, you know, because we're idiots and we didn't ask it at first, like, so
he's sharing a booth.
Right, he's right next to Neil Adams. And don't get me wrong, I love Neil Adams' work too, but I like King of the Hill. And I said, "I gotta ask." I said, what is the relation? And he said, "Oh, that's my son." And I said, "Oh man." I was like, "You gotta be proud." I was like, "This guy worked on King of the Hill." And Neil Adams, he's like, he looks at him, he's like, "Yeah, he got an effing Emmy." He's like, "I never got one."
So, yes, and you could see that he was very proud.
Right.
It was kind of a cool father-son moment.
And here I was being like super excited to meet Neil Adams' son.
Yeah. And this is the other guy over here.
Yeah. In the booth. Neil Adams, well, whatever. Who cares? But yeah, so I got the I got that Hank Hill, and that's really really awesome. I'll try to put a picture of it on the Facebook.
And then we had
the Facebag. So well then
we had two other creators we met.
So if you've ever been in the store, I think you've got a good 50-50 chance that the legend Tom Henry has been in at some point when you were in there.
Our local celebrity,
and he is a giant fan of the artist Dan Brereton. Talks about Dan Brereton all the time. He loves him. Buys anything that Dan Brereton works on. So of course, who do we happen to see but Dan Brereton?
Regis Philbin.
No,
it was Dan Brereton.
And Dan Brereton had he had a big setup. Yeah. To make a long story short, I went over and talked to him, and I said, I explained that we have a customer and a friend who's his, as far as we know, his number one fan, and we commissioned him to draw Tom on the inside cover of one of his sketchbooks. So he ended up doing an uncanny Tom, and it ended up being incredibly hilarious. It's great. I mean, it's spot on. It's spot on.
I mean, those of you that know Tom know that he is just a comic character in himself.
Right.
And to see him imposed on a page.
So we got
perfect.
Tom, a picture of Tom done by his favorite artist inside one of his favorite artist's sketchbooks for Tom.
Which I think
for Tom
is hilarious. One of the highlights for us is going to be a highlight for somebody else.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just crazy.
Anyways.
And we have one more creator we met.
You jump into it. It's your turn.
So all of you out there that love bunnies, love ninjas, maybe love ninja bunnies, would know of Usagi Yojimbo. And Usagi Yojimbo's creator, Stan Sakai, was there. And we just happened across him and thought, shoot, let's see if we can get a picture with the Incredicow. Well, not only that, Stan Sakai is one of those creators who, if you go to conventions, you'll see a lot of creators will have a signatures are free, donations to Heroes Initiative are accepted. And that's, for those that don't know, the Heroes Initiative is a way that it's an organization that's built to generate some funds so that creators in the comic industry, as most of them are independent contractors, don't usually have some of the really good healthcare options that a lot of salaried or other types of workers that are employed by major corporations do. So what the Heroes Initiative is about, or one of their main missions, is making sure that if a creator falls into a medical problem and needs some funds to help either cover hospital stay, medications, etc., they have a place, a resource they can go to get some help. And there's been a lot of big name creators that have been helped out by the Heroes Initiative. So in the community, they try and support themselves by taking donations. So, of course, you know, we each wanted to get a little Stan Sakai signature, mine, my sketchbook, and whatnot. And we dropped a few bucks in. And not only does he do his signature, but he did each of us a really nice little Usagi Yojimbo, really kind of a cool little sketch. Different poses. We each got a different pose.
And well, he was a super nice guy, too. And I asked him, I guess it all comes back to Ninja Turtles today, doesn't it?
It does.
But I told him that the reason I started reading Usagi Yojimbo in the first place is because I somehow got Usagi Yojimbo toy when I was a kid from the Ninja Turtles line. And I said, I know that the characters, it's not like they really share a universe. How did that happen? And he said he was at San Diego with Peter Laird. And he said, do you want your character to be a figure in the turtle line? And Stan just said, yeah, sure. That was it. I mean, that was it. And so obviously that did a great job of expanding the character to a lot of people that otherwise would have probably never read the book. But he also told us maybe this is some new information that we're breaking, but he said to be on the lookout for a new Usagi Yojimbo figure next year from Playmates.
Yep.
So that'll be pretty cool. We'll have to make sure we get some of those in.
And he's an older gentleman, but he's on his game and just a real nice little guy.
He took a great picture with the cow.
Oh yeah. He thought it was just a hoot and a half. He was playing around with him for a little while. So that was our meetup with Stan, and that really was the end of our time in the convention hall. As we talked about, I think yesterday, we were going to try and meet up with
some folks to do a comics and podcasting podcast recording. And unfortunately, we couldn't get to where they were because we didn't have press credentials, which we might have to apply for next year. Mm-hmm. But we ended up meeting up with John Mayo, the person that we had talked about from the comic book page. And we were just going to chat for a little bit just to kind of see. He wanted to know how our first couple of day and a half or so at the con had gone and wanted to just check in with us. And we thought, you know, I'll do the same thing with him. Well, we ended up sitting down for close to 2 hours. And then all of a sudden, as the convention was closing, our stomachs got a little hungry. So mm-hmm. we ended up going out and having dinner with John and his sister Kay, who was in for the convention.
It was funny, though, because the conversation that we had, we're just sitting there, we're talking about everything from yeah. from sales to publishing practices. We're like, man, why didn't we just record this last yeah, 2 hours? You know, but
don't worry. There's something in the works. We are going to do a recording with him. He's a data cruncher. And if you listen to anything that he does, I would recommend checking out his trades and his issues monthly reports. He's the one that crunches the numbers for comic book resources so they can tell you how many issues of certain books Diamond sold. Why Diamond just doesn't tell anyone, nobody knows. But John's the one that takes the vague information they give and is able to crunch it into actual figures. So, but we are going to be working on getting some recordings done with him in the future, both for his show and for ours. Mm-hmm. So it was just a wonderful way to end the evening tonight. I think we probably spent all told close to 4 hours with them. They were nice enough to drive us back to where we're staying and drop us off. So it was great. And outside of that, I don't think I have anything else for today. How about you?
No, other than carrying around the backpack with not just the backpack, but all the bags with the stuff we bought. I feel
everything like comes in bags.
I feel like an 85-year-old man right now.
Crippled, hobbled.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm ready to get some sleep and be recuperated for tomorrow.
All right.
Friday, I think, is going to be our biggest day.
I think so, too. We just, before we started recording, we took a look at the signings we wanted to get in line for, and you've got a couple that you're in for. I've got a couple, and we've got a couple up in the air that we don't know if we'll get to, but... Mm-hmm. And we have the Diamond Retailer Lunch, I think, right? That's Friday. That's tomorrow.
Yes. So the Diamond Retailer Lunch. We can't. Well, never mind.
So it's going to be something. So with that, we're going to go ahead and sign off. Thanks for listening to Day 2 at San Diego, and we will we'll get back to you guys tomorrow. All right, welcome to Friday, Day 3, San Diego Comic-Con. I'm Eric.
I am James.
And we are going to attempt to give you a rundown of our Friday. Started off like our other days have. We got to the convention a little bit early and somehow miraculously made our way in, just a hair ahead of the rest of the herd.
Not very far ahead of them.
About 10 seconds, I think it was.
Every day we've got to hit like two or three more entrances before we find somebody that'll let us in. But we pulled it off.
Kind of did a quick sweep of where we needed to go, and on we went. Today was chuck full of creators. Mm-hmm. There was a whole bunch of people that were in doing signings, and... It was, there's some of the signings for some of the bigger names require you to get a wristband or a ticket. Like yes. We talked about, you got a Slayer wristband a couple of days ago, and you were able to use that today, which you will talk about
in
a little bit. But we also had a couple other folks that you needed to get a wristband for. And the two big ones that we ended up getting wristbands for were Ed Brubaker and Max Landis.
Well, we had our priorities, so when we finally got in, we... Like we had said earlier, preparation is really key with the show. And if you know where you're going to need to go, you've got the map. Mm-hmm. Just like any other convention or trade show, everything's laid out in numbered aisles. So you can look at where, for instance, Eric needed to go to Image right away. I needed to go to Shout Factory right away.
Yep.
Shout Factory is located at 4118.
Which is like right inside door D,
something
I want to
like
say.
That.
And we went in door C. So you knew you were going left. I knew I was going right.
Right. And Image has a big, huge booth that's hard to miss. You can get to no matter what. So we went in. We knew exactly where we were going because we were smart and prepared.
Yep.
And I got right to Shout Factory, and they gave me a ticket.
Because that was for the Tom Matthews and John Philbin.
Tom Matthews. Yeah, and John Philbin from Return of the Living Dead. And so I got my ticket to that, which is great because if you get one of these tickets or the wristbands, essentially you're guaranteed to get admittance to the signing.
Right.
I mean, if you show up 2 minutes before the signing ends, you're probably not going to get in. If you show up 15 minutes before the signing ends, as we'll get to later on, you'll probably be lucky enough to, but it all depends on who you're seeing. So yeah, we split up, we got our tickets. I met Eric back at the
Image booth.
He'd already been through once.
Yeah, so the way it worked was getting to the Image booth, there were two sides to Image, basically. There's the Skybound side, which handles some of the product and some of their big name folks that are coming in, like Robert Kirkman and Max Landis. And then on the Image side, where they had more of the book sales, they handled a lot of the folks that didn't necessarily need to have, either didn't have a wristband or were celebrity status, but not quite as high as like a Robert Kirkman. Standing in line, when you got up there, you could get one wristband for each of the different folks that were available per person. So Kieran Gillen and
Jamie McKelvey
did a signing.
Kirkman was gone immediately.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that in a second.
Yep.
So I had a pick of that. There was Ed Brubaker, which is who we wanted, and there was, I think, two or three others in the Image line. And it's just so worked out that there was a nice young woman behind me who wanted a second Gillen and McKelvey ticket or a wristband for her friend. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, since we can get one of each, if you get me a Brubaker, I'll get you a McKelvey and Gillen. And sure enough, that's what we did. So I graciously handed her the McKelvey and Gillen, and she handed me the Brubaker. So James was able to get into the Brubaker line. As soon as that happened, we shot over the 15 feet or 20 feet, whatever it was, to get in the Skybound line because we wanted to get Max Landis. He's a relatively newcomer to the comic scene. Obviously, he's been around film and TV quite a bit, even though he's only 30 years old. Mm-hmm. We wanted to just see what the heck this guy's all about, not knowing what the heck he was going to look like or be. So we jumped in line, and about 15 seconds after we got in line, all of a sudden you started hearing people shout, Kirkman's out, Kirkman's out. And that line went from about 50 people to 8 people in no time.
Yep.
So we just waltzed right up and got our Max Landis wristbands, and away we went. And that is how we started our day. After that, it was just nothing but calm and enjoying. And
oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you. Well, your first signing after, I mean, that was getting the tickets, but your first signing, you want to go into that?
Well, the first person that we caught up with, I believe, was Dan Mora. So we had seen Grant Morrison yesterday. And Dan Mora was at the Boom booth. He was there supporting Klaus. And so we were able to go in and talk to him for a little bit. Really interesting guy. He is from San Jose, Costa Rica. So he was up for the convention. Had a very thick accent. And we just had a great time talking to him about his art. If you haven't picked up that book, like we've said, it is gorgeous. So make sure you come in and get it. I think the hardcovers will be in the next previous catalog or the one after, but just a gorgeous, gorgeous book. So we were asking him, you know, how long does it take you to do your pages? Because they're very detailed and they have a lot of depth, and the backgrounds are very, there's a lot of activity in the background, so a lot of work. And he said that he can pencil and ink about 2 pages in a day, and then he can color a page to 2 pages in a day, depending on how things go. So that just blew my mind with the level of detail he does. So that was really, really cool having a chance to talk to him.
And he had never met Grant Morrison before.
Yeah, he had never met Grant Morrison, and they were scheduled to do a joint signing, or they were going to meet up shortly after we had talked to them. So that was pretty cool. And you know, we live in a really unique age where artists can be across the world. You know, creators, I should say, can be across the world doing different things. I mean, you look at Jordi Belair, who seems to color a lot of things that are being published today, and she's in, I believe, in the UK or in Europe, one of the two. And maybe it's Europe, but she's, you know, completely removed, half a world away from a lot of the creators that she's working with, and she's able to do it. Nicola Scott, who lives in Australia, is working with Greg Rucka, who definitely does not live in Australia, and they're able to make it work. Another person that we met later on that we'll talk about, you know, from Mexico, I mean, it's amazing what this medium can do now. So we had a great little chat with Dan Mora in Credicow, got to say hi, and then we moved along. I think the next one that I had on my list was Jim Zub, which was just a complete coincidence.
You were waiting for Nicola Scott.
Maybe. We happened to be at the Image booth waiting for... I happened to be at the Image booth waiting for Nicola Scott, and Jim Zub was there, and he is one of the creators behind Wayward, and Glitter... Is it Glitter Bomb, I want to say, I think is the other one that's out? But Wayward is kind of that... the other side of Japan, I think, is how he kind of likes to phrase it, and it's actually one of my wife's favorite books that's out right now. So, being the sucker I am, I broke down and got a book for him to sign to her. Real nice guy. He was really excited about seeing retailers. He doesn't see a lot of retailers. And so as a thank you to us, but more importantly, as a thank you to you, our customers, he sent us back with about 10 or 12 signed little Wayward cards that we've got to hand out. So if you're a Wayward fan, stop in and grab one. If you've not checked out Wayward, you know, think about it. Take a look at it. It is really quite well done. It's very classy. I like it a lot. Trish, my wife, loves it. So we do have those. We'll have those available for you. And this is my show, apparently, because these are all the creators that I wanted to see.
Yeah.
Next was one of the biggest ones for me. Ever since picking up Black Magic for the first time and looking at Nicola Scott's artwork, I instantly was drawn to it. She has a way of capturing faces and especially eyes that are very expressive, and her overall work is just gorgeous. So I couldn't wait to say hi to her and just to thank her for her work. And now obviously she's working with Greg Rucka on who was the writer for Black Magic, now moving over to Wonder Woman for the time being. So she showed up, and I happened to be in line there and walked up and got a couple of minutes to chat with her. She was kind of settling in, and I did. I asked her, how did you get so good at drawing eyes? And she kind of smiled, and she said that it was interesting that someone would point that out. Most people don't catch that. But she told me that she started drawing later in life, in her late 20s, and she found that she was drawn to it when she would be on the phone on conference calls or other things like that, and she would be doodling and drawing, and she would always be drawing eyes. That was the one thing that she always found herself trying to work on and get better and better and better. So for the better part of a decade, she has just continued to grow in her drawing, her art, but focusing on eyes because it's something that she's always done. So I thought that was kind of a unique little piece. Very, very wonderful woman. I wanted to take the chance to say hi to her. Obviously, she lives in Australia, so she won't be coming to America very frequently. So it was nice to have that option. And James was kind enough to just stand there and let me be a fanboy for a minute.
Yeah.
And then we moved on. After that, was it hopping across the aisle?
Well, actually, I didn't just stand there when you were talking to her. I ran over to the Dark Horse booth. Now, one thing, you'd think that we're a comic shop and we're both collectors, that we would have stacks and stacks and stacks of stuff on hand to get signed. The problem is flying out from Wisconsin. We had to get it all here.
And I'll get it home.
Right. And, you know, we're bringing clothes, and I didn't want to check any bags. So we brought a minimal amount of things, and some of the things that I did bring with me to get signed that I will get to later on are big, heavy, space-eating hardcovers. So as much as I would have liked to have brought a ton of Grant Morrison books and a ton of Brian Wood books, it wasn't in the cards. You know, we couldn't make it happen.
I would have brought every issue of Black Magic if I could.
Right, right. If these, you know, if we had this caliber and this amount of creators at, say, Wizard World Chicago, we would probably be one of those
annoying guys
that's a hand truck carrying around three short boxes to get signed. As it stands, we did not have that option, which probably made us a lot more bearable on the plus side. But on the downside, you know, a lot of the stuff that we otherwise would have loved to have gotten signed, the logistics of it just don't mesh up.
Yep.
But while you were at Nicola Scott, I ran over to the Dark Horse booth and I picked up a couple of copies of Aliens Defiance by Brian Wood. And I got one of the Conan the Slayer number one San Diego Comic-Con variants, which will be on the shelf at the shop when we get back, available for purchase. And then met up with you again back at Nicola Scott. And then we just hopped right across the aisle to the Dark Horse booth. They were pretty much kitty corner from each other. And we stood in the growing line to see Brian Wood.
Brian, it was actually the trifecta. It was Brian Wood, Gary Brown, and Tula Lotay.
Gary Brown from The Massive.
The Massive and Black Road.
Mm-hmm.
And Tula Lotay, who was part of Rebels and I think is part of their new, I think the three of them are promoting that new book that they're on.
Briggs Land.
Which has already been optioned by AMC.
She's doing the covers for it, for the time being at least. And we can get to that later when we talk about a certain meal.
Yeah.
But, it was cool. I mean, it was a quick line. You know, it was
a
quick line, and
for three people, you shot through pretty quick. Right. But there was a decent amount of folks stacked up waiting.
Yeah.
So
Brian Wood is a guy who always puts out quality. The first thing I read that he did was DMZ, and his books are always good. Yep. So
we will always have them in stock.
Oh yeah,
you can always come in and find them.
So we went through, and you bought a giant Massive hardcover.
I bought a Massive hardcover of Massive. Oddly enough.
Use the yawns. It's been quite the couple of days.
So it's volume one of Massive. I think it's just two volumes that are going to make up the whole series. But yeah, it was wonderful. Gary Brown did a nice little remark inside the cover. That was nice. It was great.
So we went from the Brian Wood trifecta signing there up to Diamond, who of course is our comic distributor. They had a San Diego Comic Con lunch. Now it's some
retailer appreciation
lunch. If you've ever been in the shop before on a day where we may get our deliveries, or if you are a Pull-List subscriber, you may have heard us gripe about Diamond once or twice in the past, and there's a reason for it, you know. And every once in a while, they'll do something like this, and it makes it a little bit harder to criticize them when they screw up. So we went to the Diamond lunch, and that was upstairs, so we had to brave the masses for this. We did not know, unbeknownst to us, even though we had signed up for the lunch, we never got the information that it was 2.5 hours long. Yeah,
we thought it was an hour lunch.
So I mentioned that I had brought a bunch of hardcovers to get signed. It was because the legendary Russ Heath was going to be signing at the IDW booth at 1 o'clock. So here I was hoping that the lunch would be wrapped up by, like, you know, 12:45. A lot of these panels are 45 minutes. And then I'd run down and see Russ Heath. Not quite the case. So I left about 50 minutes into the Diamond lunch, which is sponsored by a bunch of different companies. It's sponsored by DC, Marvel,
Image,
Dark Horse, Image,
IDW,
Valiant, Boom,
IDW,
and IDW,
mm-hmm.
and
Titan.
Yep, and Titan. And each company will get up and give a sort of an overview of what they've got coming down the pipeline. Any real, like, publishing changes to trade dress, things like that. And there's no giant revelation. Stuff like that is saved for the panels and things like that. You know, it's more on the marketing and sales side of the business. But I left to go down and to run downstairs to Russ Heath. Now, I'm assuming most of the people listening had never been to San Diego, but if you have, you would understand that going from one of the panel rooms upstairs to somewhere in the middle of the convention hall, it's not just like opening a door and going across a hallway. It is kind of time consuming. There's packed crowds. And they just also happened to be doing this thing where they had giant queues to go into
The big ballroom.
The big ballroom for what must have been one of the big, maybe a television panel or movie panel. So they would get these guys that had sort of this 5 foot tall green snow fence type of thing. And they would just for 5-10 minutes, they would block off a section of hallway. Well, they let the queue that had been lining up into one by one, one at a time, into this panel room. So if you're in a hurry to get somewhere and you get stuck there, it is a pain in the butt. So of course that, that held me up a little bit, but I got down to the IDW booth and I get down there and I kept asking a couple different people where Russ Heath was going to be signing and nobody seemed to be able to tell me. And they were having a little powwow trying to figure it out. Finally, they came over and they said, "We don't know where Russ is going to sign because he's in a wheelchair and we need to find a table that's a little bit lower for him." Now, Russ Heath is 90, and obviously he's, you know, he's not just going to be sitting in a stool that Kevin Eastman just got up from or something. So they have to make special accommodations for him. It was one of the more interesting signings I have ever been at. I brought a couple Sergeant Rock archives, a big DC War artist edition that focused on Russ Heath. And Russ Heath finally showed up, and I was the first person in line when they finally figured out where he was going to be. And it was an experience. I don't really know how else to describe it. For the first probably 20 minutes, Russ Heath didn't want to do anything other than eat his pizza and drink his water bottle and just sort of talk about the good old days. And he talked about all, I mean, just, he had all sorts of cool stories. It was phenomenal. I mean, I was just standing there and the first thing he said was, "Russ, I grew up reading your work. You're a legend. I'm a big fan. I would be honored if you could sign these books for me." And he just said, "Okay." And then he, you know, 20 minutes later, I've got one of the IDW guys coming up to me and he's like, "Hey," he said, "you got to move it along." He said, there's a line of people wanting to." I said, "I can't do anything." I said, he's not signing. He's just kind of eating his pizza." And the guy said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." He said, I don't really know what to do." I said, "I don't know what to do either." And we just kind of stood there. And finally he went and he found his boss. And his boss found this girl that apparently had helped Russ Heath there or brought him or something. And she came over and said, You've got to start signing." She like took the pizza from him. She's like, "You got to start signing." And he's not like an old, I mean, he's old, but he's not super enfeebled or anything. He just decided he wanted to eat his pizza and finish his pizza before the signing started. And she said, "You've got 30 minutes before you're done here." And then they have somebody else scheduled to come in. And then he said, "Oh, all right." And then he started signing and he signed my books and I was on my way.
Hightailed out of there.
But I got 30 minutes with Russ Heath, with him just telling stories about anything that came to mind. He told me that he always checks his water bottles when they give him a water bottle at a show to make sure that it's not full of gin. I said, "Well, that's a valid concern that anyone could have, you know." It was a unique experience, the likes of which you can only get at an event like this, you know. And he was probably looking around, other than Stan Lee, who I know was there, but
we got a picture of the back of his head one day.
Yeah, a picture of the back of his head. But other than Stan Lee, I think Russ Heath was like the only Silver Age writer or artist that was in attendance there. You know, these guys, there's just not a lot of them around. So it was a treasure to me to be able to sit and meet Russ Heath. And after that was done, I hightailed it back up to the Diamond Lunch.
Yes, meanwhile, I was there killing time, listening to all of the glorious information that the various publishers had to give, and let's just say it was a drawn-out affair, but that's okay. We made it through, and then James got back shortly before everything wrapped up, and we got our thanks for appearing bags that just had a few little parting things, more or less books that were in overstock or things like that for us to take with us and head out. So we grabbed those and we headed right back downstairs because shortly thereafter, James had his big signing of the day.
Yep. I got in line. They had a guy, like a security guy, who was holding the rope of a stanchion, and you had to show the wristband, and he'd open it up.
And this is for Slayer.
For Slayer. At the Dark Horse booth. It was some, like some sort of elite nightclub. Slayer has a Dark Horse comic coming out. A 3-issue miniseries about the... They had a new album that just came out called Repentless. And there's a video about a prison riot. That was the music video for their new single. And there's going to be a Slayer comic detailing the background story behind the music video. And so, because Slayer and a lot of these thrash guys are all Bay Area, a lot of these guys live around there. You know, Slayer, Anthrax, you know, Metallica, Megadeth came out of the Bay Area. All those guys are really situated around there, and a lot of them are friends, and they go way back to the 80s. And there had been a party with Anthrax and Slayer at one of the local bars the night before, which we unfortunately weren't able to go to. But I was very excited as a big Slayer fan to meet them. We had went around and were lucky enough to scrounge up some Slayer comics and an Exodus comic for Gary Holt to sign. And it was, they were really cool. They provided a big poster that's going to be the variant cover for the new comic once it comes out. And the cover art was done by Eric Powell of the Goon fame. And so he signed, he was there at the same panel with Slayer. And they also had their producer there as well. So they signed everything. The only thing that Tom Araya would not sign was the Slayer comic that I had, because it was an unauthorized biography. So he didn't sign it, but the rest of the band did. And then I got Gary Holt to sign my Exodus comic. So, and I got a picture with Slayer that we'll put on the Facebook. And that was pretty damn cool. From there, I hightailed it over to Shout Factory to meet the Return of the Living Dead guys. And I noticed they were playing the movie in the background. And if any of you have seen Return of the Living Dead, if you haven't, you should run out and watch it right now. It's a hilarious movie. It's also a great zombie movie. But there's sort of a graveyard scene that involves a decent amount of nudity. And we were wondering, I was talking to the guys in line ahead of me, and I said, what do you think they're going to do in about 3 minutes when that scene comes on? They said, oh, they'll cut it, or they've got an edited version. And they didn't, and that just kept playing on the screen during the rest of the show. So that was kind of entertaining. But the line moved really quickly for being a small booth that Shout Factory is. And we got up, and they were Thon Matthews and John Philbin, who played Freddy and Chuck. Freddy, of course, is the guy who gets sprayed with the chemical in the beginning. And Chuck is the kind of 1950s-looking guy who ends up in the attic. They were both there. They were the guys signing, and they signed the collector's edition Blu-ray, and they signed a cool poster that Shout Factory gave out. So that was really cool. It was neat to get both of those, and they were really cool, really easygoing guys. And they, you could tell that they were just, you know, they were happy to be there and connect with the fans. So that was really neat to be able to meet them and get that stuff signed. After that, we thought we had...
Well, so yeah, after that, we decided we were going to go hit up Artist Alley for a little bit because we had a couple of hours to kill for the next signing we wanted to go to. So we ended up snaking our way through a little bit, and we happened upon Gerardo Sandoval.
Yep.
Who has done, I think, 4 or 5 Spawn sketch cover variants, did a soon-to-be published or released
Venom
cover. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
Oh, it's been a long day.
Which is an awesome cover.
And we saw the original art there.
Yeah, you have the original art.
Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And we spent probably the better part of 30, 35 minutes talking with him about you know, the things that were... that got him into comics and where he learned to draw the way that he is. And you picked up right away on some Todd McFarlane vibes, you know, with the line work and the detail. He said, yeah. And then he was explaining to us, so Gerardo's from Mexico City, and he was explaining to us how there's a stronger manga presence in Mexico than comics in some areas. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of Mexican comic artists will have elements of manga, and he was talking about how there's some elements of manga in his work. I couldn't pick them out myself, but...
Oh, I could see it.
That doesn't mean that they're not there. I guess maybe, you know, when you're looking at a Venom cover, you won't see it, but if you're looking at Spawn, you see some of the face and the hair and things like in the eyes, maybe you can pick it up. But
well, when I said I see... Because we were talking about... He was saying about a lot of his influences, and like we said, McFarlane came up, and I said, I see a lot of Joe Madureira style in your work, too. And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. He said, well, Joe Madureira is from... basically from where I'm from. He said, we shared a lot of the same influences. So it's basically, we have a very similar style, but it's coming from the same place.
Right. It's not one copying the other. It's just growing, grabbing from their pool of knowledge of what they see.
And then it was cool because we talked about, he talked about a lot of the beautiful areas around Mexico City, and we were talking to him about the lovely lake country area of Wisconsin. And he's just a really, really nice guy, really genuine guy.
Yeah.
And it was awesome to spend as much time talking to him as we did.
Yeah, he was very great. After that, we still thought we had a bunch of time to kill, so we were kind of just moseying along back in the backside of the convention, just kind of working our way around. And we got to a point where I think it was, 10 to 5? Quarter to 5? And we were like,
About quarter to 5.
Ed Brubaker is going to be up next at the image booth, and we've got the wristbands. So let's head over. We don't have to be in a rush because we've got the wristbands, but we also don't want to dawdle. Well, we get there, and I look at the table, and I tell James, I'm like, geez, that looks like Ed's sitting down there. And sure enough, it is Ed Brubaker. And we look at the line, and there was two people in front of us that didn't have wristbands, and we were confirming, is this the Ed Brubaker? And they were like, oh, yeah, they said we could just jump in on the back end of the line. To which we both looked at each other and we went, oh, crap, we almost missed Ed Brubaker. We were off by an hour. So we were able to get in line and talk with him for a little bit. We had maybe a minute or two with him and each got a couple of things signed. Spectacular guy. I wish we could have spent more time with him. Yeah, that would have been
very nice.
Yeah. Just a hoot when he signed the books. He put in little word bubbles to personalize things and just a real nice guy. And then as soon as he got done, Max Landis was right at the next table or at that table in the next time slot.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, again, neither you nor I have ever seen Max Landis. Don't know, him from Adam. So we're just kind of standing there going, gee, I wonder where Max Landis is.
Well, I saw...
You saw something.
We know what we knew what his book coming out in Image was, but I had asked the Image people before what if they had his book. Because I said, well, I'd like to pick one up to get him to sign it. And they said, well, it's not going to be out until August.
Yep.
And we said, well, what is he signing? And the guy's like,
I don't know.
He's like, I don't know. He's like, I know he did a DC book. I said, well, you guys are having an Image signing
for a DC book?
You're telling us to go get a DC book? And he's like, I don't really know what to tell you, man. And I said, all right, well, I figured worst comes to worst, I'll have him sign my program or something, But knowing that, when we were standing in line for Brubaker, we saw the person who ended up being Max Landis and a woman with him who had
assistant who had a bag
filled with an ash can sized copy of the book that he's got coming out from Image. And what they ended up doing later was, if you had the wristband from Max Landis, they would give you one of those to get signed. So we got this cool ash can that I will read on the plane ride home.
And I'm not going to lie. When you see the guy, if you saw the pictures on our Facebook page, again, we didn't know what to expect. Then you see him, and he's wearing a rainbow-colored tank top with a rainbow-colored mohawk. And you're like, okay, I don't even know what to expect now. Come to find out, as we were standing there waiting, he passed Ed Brubaker and had a total fanboy moment, like geeked out at seeing Ed Brubaker.
Yeah.
And then sat down and was like, holy crap, that was Ed Brubaker.
Well, they had a little brief conversation.
Yeah. It was so fun. And then after he sits down and says, holy crap, that was Ed Brubaker, he goes, this is the first signing I've ever done. I have no clue what to do. What do I do? And he just kind of sat there, and it was one of those moments where you could tell that his assistants had never done it before.
they were kind of like, I don't know. And so the first person in line kind of hesitantly stepped forward. And I have to admit, you know, I don't think I'll ever forget really any of these people that I've met, but I will certainly never forget meeting Max Landis.
Mm-hmm.
When you walk up and you go, oh, hey, Mr. Landis, you know, just happy to see you and thanks for everything that you've done. And he holds out his hand and goes, what's your name? You know, I'm Eric. Hi, I'm Max. Just like, I don't know. It was like you're on a playground playing kickball with a kid you've never met before. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was so loose and happy to be there and doing whatever. God knows if he was on something. I don't know if he was. I wish he would have shared. But it was kind of a total trip. You had the ash can.
Yep.
And I brought a couple of issues of Superman American Alien for him to sign. And on each one of the Superman American Alien issues, he kind of drew the Martian helmet on top of Superman on the cover and then signed it. In fact, he signed one book twice, which, oh, I guess I have four signatures on three books.
He signed one the right side upside, up, and then another one on the same down. Book upside down.
Yeah, so that was kind of funny.
Double signed by Max Landis.
But just a hoot. And then, of course, I had to ask, you know, you've got a successful career in film and TV. Why comic books? And he point blank just said, because I grew up reading comic books and I love them. And I was like, okay. And then he goes, and because I'm pretty active on one of the Superman forums, and I figured I should probably shut up and put my money where my mouth is and actually write it if I think I can do it better. So that was kind of interesting. He also went through with one of the people in front of us. So Superman American Alien is a 7-issue series. And he kind of went through, like, issues 1 and 2 are this, issues 3 and 4 are this, issue 5, yeah, issue 6 and 7 are this. And it's kind of interesting how he could take a step back after he wrote the miniseries and identify what he perceived to be the strengths and weaknesses of the stories. But even more importantly, he spoke to the art that was in each one, because this was a series where each issue had a different artist. And it was kind of funny. He actually, so I think some of the creators, some of the artists he's met, some he hasn't. Then one that he had met was Jock. And Jock was over at DC doing a signing. And someone had said, or he had seen that someone had a book that had been signed by Jock. And he's like, where's Jock? And she said, oh, he's over at the DC booth. And Max is like, he didn't bother to text me, tell me he was here. Oh, he's on my crap list now. I mean, like, it was so hysterical just to watch his interaction. So that was that was a completely unknown, but we just thought we would see what it was all about, and very entertaining moment.
Oh, absolutely.
After that, I think we shot back over to Artist Alley. We said hi to Otis and checked in and see how he was doing, and then he gave us a recommendation for dinner, which was Fiesta Del Rey in Old Town. So we made it over there, had ourselves some amazing Mexican food.
It was delicious.
Rolled ourselves out to the car, and are now, I think, ready to call it a night.
Yeah. Yeah, the heat is terrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. All you want to do is just lay down and sleep.
Nothing compared to Wisconsin right now, but
yeah. Well, either way, you know, again, if you've ever been to a con, you're going to end up carrying stuff around. But more than anything today, lugging around everything that we purchased, everything that we brought with us, plus on top of that, a bunch of big hardcovers and artist editions that I got signed by Russ Heath.
And I got my massive.
Yeah.
We were feeling it.
I feel like a brittle old man, and I just need to get like a professional massage and spend the next hour in a hot tub and then zonk out for like 12 hours.
So that's it for day 3 of San Diego. We will, we'll tell you what happens for tomorrow.
We're a little less with it every day.
Yeah, we'll see what tomorrow brings. So with that, we will talk to you next time. San Diego Comic-Con, Saturday edition. Yesterday was Friday, today's Saturday. It's our fourth day at the convention.
I don't even know what's going on anymore.
I don't either. We were pretty exhausted after Friday. We had that marathon running around getting different signatures that we kind of took it easy today.
Yeah.
We didn't even get to the convention until the afternoon.
No, we took, well, we followed Phil Hester's advice, which had, he had told us, as he was a veteran of many San Diegos, to take a day off and kind of do something else and explore. And he told us that Saturday was one of the Wednesday and Saturday were the two busiest days. So we decided, well, it's the fourth day. You know, after a day where you meet Grant Morrison, Slayer,
Ed Brubaker,
among others,
Max Landis.
Within a couple of hours, you just you got to tone it down a little bit. So we decided we'd let ourselves sleep a little bit later, and just kind of walk around, explore the area. We went down to the bank. We got some breakfast at Denny's. I think in a long con like this, I go to a few every year, it's always good to have that one day where you kind of relax and you don't have a very rigid itinerary. You know, it lets you loosen up a little bit and just kind of enjoy the little things that can sometimes bother you. You know, if it's, you get, let's say that you get back to the house at 9:30 instead of 9 o'clock, just if you don't have any plans, it doesn't really matter. So it's good to have a day like that. And we certainly enjoyed it. The only plan that we really had was to meet a certain creator after 3 o'clock at the Marriott.
It was the Marriott.
Pool. What the heck was the name of it? Was it like a tiki bar or something?
The CabanaCon.
Well, no, but I mean the
well, I don't know what the heck it was.
Well, anyways, so it's called the CabanaCon. And what it was a little convention that Tim Seeley had thrown together. And by little convention, we mean it was a little convention in a, what, like 10 by 12 cabana?
They probably more rightfully deserve the moniker of World's Smallest Comic-Con. But it's ours, so they didn't get
well,
it.
Well, yeah.
No, it was a convention that consisted of three people. Tim rented out that little cabana for the afternoon
mm-hmm.
to conduct some phone calls that he had, hang out with a couple of creators. So,
well, he had scheduled meetings between 12 and 3, and then after 3, it was sort of an open invitation, come by. And
mm-hmm.
We showed up and eventually made our way into. Well, first of all, after walking around and noticing a lot of notable names kind of hanging out around the bar area, we went into the little cabana, and Tim Seeley was in there talking to some people. Andy Kuhn was in there.
Yeah.
Artist.
That was actually the person that we talked to first.
Yeah, so we talked to him for a little while, and
yeah.
He gave us his impression on... Now, none of those guys were actually at
San Diego.
Comic-Con proper this year. They were out there because it's the gathering place for everyone.
Yeah, as I understood it, it sounded like... I'm assuming Tim must have had some DC meetings to go to because he was wearing one of the DC shirts that everyone was wearing today.
Yeah.
But it seemed like, you know, he called up a couple of his friends and said, hey, I'm going to be in town. I'm going to rent this out. Fly in if you want. So there was a few that took him up on it, really.
Yep. So we talked to Andy Kuhn for a while. And again, he sort of told us that at this point in time in the show, it's gotten so big that he couldn't even find a place to stay. So he said, well, we just flew out. And
he was going to spend the night on the floor of a friend's hotel room.
Exactly. And have a blast at the cabana and then go back and not have to deal with the mess that San Diego can be. So we talked to him for a while, and he told us the evolution in the con that he's seen over the last however many years he's been going, a long time. I think he said his first... the first time he went was 97 or 98.
Something like that.
And that was great. He was a heck of a nice guy, and he had a lot of cool insight. After we talked to Andy Kuhn, we went about 4 feet in the other direction.
Yeah, crossed the whole hall.
Right.
Went to the other side.
And we met up and talked to...
Tyree Dillehay.
Who is a director for Bob's Burgers.
Which, of course, the way we actually stumbled upon talking to him was there was a couple of portfolio pages of original art that were open, basically mm-hmm. right next to him. And we kind of walked over and said, you know, hey, is this your work? Can we take a look at it? And his response was, I have no clue whose this is. I have nothing to do with the comic art. And so we kind of inquired as to what he was up to.
Well, and the art ended up being Andy's.
Yeah, it was Andy's, which, you know, 4 feet away, easily mistaken. But, yeah, so we talked to Tyree just to figure out kind of, you know, how he fit into everything. And say he was director for Bob's Burgers, and away we went.
Yeah, he was in. I mean, the amount of information that he offered was just crazy. Everything from, he took us through sort of what it takes to start an episode.
It was all the way through the, basically a day in the life.
Yeah, all the way through the you know, the post-production aspects of, yep, of getting an animated series from concept to air. And we talked about the difference between, you know, a show like South Park and, yep, the difference between something like Family Guy or The Simpsons and Bob's Burgers, and what kind of the niche, the specific niche that Bob's Burgers fits in versus some of those other animated shows, and how Fox views it as kind of a thematic or spiritual successor to, yep, The Simpsons, if that would ever go off the air, because it's not quite as crude as Family Guy can be, so you can play it around a family and not worry to being, you don't have to worry about offending everyone.
Yep.
It's not that type of humor. So it was cool to hear that. But he took us through, I mean, basically how he got into the industry too. And how when he was in do you remember what school he went to? I can't remember where he went to school.
I can't remember.
But he made a student film called Hip-Hopolis,
mm-hmm,
and that got him noticed.
By Disney. Yep.
And he started working on
a bunch of pitch shows, stuff that didn't really ever make it to air yet.
Yeah,
but
like a lot of pilots.
Yeah, he did a ton of different pilot and pitch work. And then after getting some notoriety through those, this opportunity with Bob's Burgers came about due to one of the other folks that's on staff. And he kind of took a look at it and thought it sounded really good and,
mm-hmm,
you know, wanted to take a jump at it. And now, what did he say? They're going into their seventh season. They're going to start recording their seventh season here shortly?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that. Sixth or seventh. But either way, it was really interesting to kind of get his feel. And, you know, I think what was really, it was probably a refresher for us more so than, you know, him, because here we were, con mindset, comics, comic creators, artists, accessories, toys, all that kind of stuff. And we were so focused on that side of things. And here our minds go in a completely different direction. We're talking to a director who is working on a hit television series that's been nominated for an Emmy.
Needless to say, we were not exactly taking notes. We were
just enamored with the ability opportunity to talk.
A couple drinks in and just having a good time.
Yeah.
And then after that, I mean, Tyree was great, and we monopolized time. I mean, what did we talk to him for, 45 minutes?
Oh, probably. And, you know, of course, kept trying to be as aware of his time as we could and not monopolize it, but he seemed to really be getting into it, so we just let it go.
Yeah, there were a couple of times where we would ask him a question, and he would say, he's like, that's a good question. I'm going to put my phone down for this one. And it was really cool. It was really insightful. And he was just such an incredibly nice guy, but he also had, I could have talked to him for hours, because every question that I had, he had a very, very well thought out answer to everything.
I'm going to cut in here. Our audio on the recording for some reason glitched at this point. And what we started talking about was just some of the Hollywood inside information that Tyree was giving us, mostly pertaining to older sitcom shows that James and I were fans of or that we were aware of. And one of those happened to be Married with Children. One of the creators on Married with Children was Michael G. Moy, and he was a black man, and a lot of people wouldn't have picked up on that just by hearing the name. It was a very normal-sounding name, no, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. But when the show was conceived between Michael Moy and Ron Levitt, it was conceived that it would be a black family, kind of the opposite, basically, of The Cosby Show. It was an anti-Cosby Show. and we kind of talked to him about why did the actors and actresses end up white. And he said it wasn't a case of whitewashing or anything like that. It was just based on as they were developing the movie or the TV series along in the writing and casting side of things, they ended up casting white people. And it may have made a little more sense, I guess, looking back on it, if they were really trying to go with the anti-Cosby show, if the actors and actresses had been black. But either way, you know, it's just kind of a nice little Hollywood story. It's kind of interesting to hear. He talked about how he had met Michael Moy and talked a little bit about that. And we just kind of reminisced a little bit more about some of the shows that were on, some of the things that he'd been involved in from a pilot standpoint, trying to get stuff taken off the ground. But he certainly was very generous with his time. And one of the last things that we touched on was licensing for Bob's Burgers. And right now, there's not a lot of Bob's Burgers merchandise available that's licensed. It's pretty much all things that you can find on Etsy or, you know, personal Amazon shops, eBay, things like that. And right now, the company is in the process of starting to get licensed merchandise out there. I don't know if it is a Hollywood-type thing or more of an animated show-type thing, but there was some hesitation in getting into the licensed merchandise because you don't know how long your show is going to last. The last thing you want to do is invest a lot of money into merchandise and your show goes off the air the next year. However, with the Emmy nomination, with the kind of the appointing of next in line behind The Simpsons as far as carrying the torch of a family animated show on Fox, and a lot of the really good things that are happening for them, the company's decided it's time to go. So hopefully in the next year or so, we'll start to see more and more Bob's Burgers licensed merchandise. And then after that, we just, you know, we wanted to be sensitive to Tyree's time. He had given us like 30 to 40 minutes, and there were a couple of people that were kind of standing outside of the cabana that we were on that were kind of waving at him, that knew him. So we thought, you know, let's be respectful, let him have some time to go chat with those folks. So we kind of, we said thank you, parted ways, and he moved his way along. So that was kind of the end up, the wrap up of our discussion with Tyree, and I'm going to go back to the regular recording now.
So when he left, then we had to go over and talk to Tim Seeley.
Right, because that was who we were there to see. So we kind of moseyed right on over and dropped in, said hey, and
maybe we'll have some news about that very soon.
We'll see. But we were standing there just kind of chit-chatting a little bit with a couple of the, I'm assuming they were his other, some of his other friends that were there. Mm-hmm. And we were just kind of standing around talking, and then all of a sudden, between James and I, this person appears wearing glasses and a hat, and just so happened that we had seen him yesterday. I don't think he knew us from Adam, which is probably for the better, but there was Ed Brubaker.
Yeah, and so what we took away from this was that Ed Brubaker came up, he introduced himself to Tim Seeley, and he said, Tim, I don't think we've ever met. I know we've shared a few panels before, so we were there for the first meeting of Tim Seeley and Ed Brubaker, which was phenomenal. And then Brubaker and Seeley and a couple of these other guys that were there started talking. And I mean, Ed Brubaker was telling some wacky stories about the Marvel office.
Even before that, he was talking about his childhood. And sounds like he grew up out in this area, San Diego, LA. And sounds like he was a little bit of a troublemaker when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. So what I took away from part of that was he's got a little firsthand experience, and maybe that's where some of the criminal side of things came from. But
well, not that he was a criminal, just a
hood, kind of sure. Just a kid, you know, goofing around. But
we had stuff that we can't repeat.
Yeah.
But we heard some really, really interesting stuff about inside the Marvel offices.
Yep.
And that was just, I mean, the whole thing was just kind of surreal. It was a treat to be there and to hear that stuff.
And I think it was probably maybe 15, 20 minutes that he was talking. And, you know, as comic book fans, you know, more above being in the business of retailer, just being fans standing next to a creator who you've pretty much read almost everything that they've done, and you appreciate the time they've put in the work, and to just be able to stand in that person's presence it can be kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to stand next to him and not feel out of place, you know, never at one point did at least I ever feel like I didn't belong there. I probably didn't, but
no, it was, we were just it all was standing great. Around yeah, drinking beers,
just chatting,
listening to these guys tell stories. It was
awesome.
The coolest thing. I mean, there were maybe what, 7 of us in there.
Yeah.
And half of them are people that everyone knows. Yep. And then there was us and somebody else who probably, we probably, if we knew who they were, they probably have worked on something we've read before too.
Yep.
So that was really cool.
Yeah. That was an absolute treat. And after that, we decided, well, what the hey, let's pop back in over to the main convention and just see what shenanigans are going on. We didn't have any agenda. We just started walking and made our way around and wound up back in Artist Alley again. Had a nice little chat with Otis to kind of round out the Saturday and get where he was at. So that was wonderful. And then after that, they started closing the convention down, which I think that's something to note for anyone who's coming out to San Diego. It's a little bit different than the shows that we're used to, Wizard World and C2E2. Mm-hmm. Those tend to go to like 9 or 9:30 at night. And San Diego closes down at like 7 or 7:30. So you're kind of...
Yeah, I think it was 7 that they closed the show floor every night.
And they start funneling people out. And obviously that probably has something to do with the fact that they have well over 100,000 people there.
Right.
And you're all funneling out across train tracks to get to the Gas Lamp District and catch buses and taxis and whatever. So so that all totally makes sense. But what we ended up doing was heading out, and we were invited to dinner.
Yeah. We got invited to dinner by our friends at DC Comics. The always incredibly friendly and gracious Stuart Schreck.
Yep.
And we went to... Do you remember the name of it?
Ooh.
Because I could say it's Brazilian barbecue, but...
Yeah, give me half a second. I know I can pull it up. But yeah, we went out. It was Brazilian barbecue, and it was Rei do Gado Brazilian Steakhouse. That's the first time either you or I have been to a Brazilian steakhouse.
Yeah.
Did not know what to expect other than sit down and enjoy the ride, and it was a blast.
Oh, yeah. It was again, another really cool experience. It was half... But I mean, not half. I guess it was probably 3/4 other retailers.
Yep, and then there were three of the DC staff. So we had Stuart, Ski, and Vince.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of part of the sales, marketing, and retailer side of things. So they're the folks that we interface with the most from DC Comics from a corporate standpoint.
Right. But yeah, really cool. These guys are... They're all dedicated to helping the stores become better, and not just better at selling DC products, but better stores.
Yeah.
And so it was neat to be able to pick their brain about a lot of things and be able to pick other retailers' brains. I mean, I sat across from Stuart, mm-hmm. Schreck. Ski was to my left. And then diagonally from me was, I can't remember his name. But he was a guy who had 9 stores in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got these guys as kind of a sounding board.
I was next to him, but I don't count.
You were there, but you were talking, I guess you were talking to your own guys, which I was going to get to.
Yep.
You had a couple guys that were like in front of you that owned, was it 2 stores, 3 stores they had?
2 stores.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess to paint the picture, I had the luxury of going to the DC studios and getting a chance in the DC office, I should say, getting a chance to get to know Stuart and Ski a little bit better. So it worked out really well that you got to sit next to them. And I want to point out, between Stuart and Vince, they have almost 50 years of working at DC Comics. I think Vince said he's working on his 33rd year.
Yeah, something
and
like that.
Stuart's on his 16th year. And then you add Ski in, who is the relative newcomer in that group of 3. He's got, what, probably 30, 35 years of experience in the comics industry working with Marvel, Archie, DC. I mean, like, he knows all the players, all the people. So there's a ton of just historical knowledge of the industry. The peaks, the valleys, the rebuilding. And so for you, having not had a chance to get to speak with them as much,
it was perfect. You got to pick their brains on things that maybe I have or different questions of the same vein that I would have. Whereas for me, I was hanging out, I was to your right away from Ski. So I ended up being able to talk with a few other retailers about some of their practices. You know, how do they lay out their stores? What do they do? And, you know, I was really pleased because at the end of the discussions, what it always came down to was, you know, we try really hard to do right by all of our customers. We try to make sure that they're taken care of first, those that have pull lists and things like that. And they were the same way. I mean, you get some shops that will rob from their pull list to either get a hot spec book out on eBay or something, play dirty pool, basically. And these guys came across to me that they weren't that way. And then as we talked, kind of explained how they handle shortages and things like that. So it was really nice. It was nice to be able to talk to other people that seemed like honest and people that had integrity.
Yeah.
But yeah, you got to tell everybody, what were some of the things that you talked to Ski about? Because you guys went for about 2 hours straight.
Well, yeah, we talked about everything from, you know, obviously it's everybody, if you're a retailer, you complain about diamonds. So we talked about that, and without going into a lot of the specifics, a lot of the issues that are out there are known, and you know, there's only so much that the companies can do about it. So if you have a store that's not Cowabunga Comics, and you know, it should be, but if your store is not Cowabunga Comics, you know, mistakes are going to happen. And even if you're DC Comics or you're Marvel Comics, you're not going to be able to talk into Diamond's ear and say, hey, you guys got to do this better or that better, because it's on them. And they're the only ones that can improve themselves. So cut your stores some slack. If a delivery shows up damaged, a delivery doesn't show up, they get the wrong items. There's not even the big powers that be at DC have a lot of sway over that. And that is sort of a distillation of maybe a 20-minute conversation. But we talked about a lot of different things about the perception that DC had of Rebirth and how it has blown away any expectations that they have. That the initial numbers now for Rebirth are way over what they were for the New 52.
Yep. Beat their wildest expectations. They know they're aware they're going to see a dip at some point, because not everyone's going to be able to stay on every title all along. But it sounds like they are more encouraged now than they ever were with New 52.
Right. And the other thing, we talked a lot about variants. We talked about how they are going to do their, like we said, they're going to do their best to stay away from incentivized variants. So that which Marvel does more than anyone, which is 1 in 25, 1 in 50, 1 in 75. And
yeah,
they said we're going to be sticking to the A and B variants on the Rebirth titles, and I think that that's going to be a safe bet for them and a safe bet for retailers. And again, I don't want to go too much into a lot of the industry specifics. It's sort of more retailer oriented. We had some great conversations, and then eventually a lot of it swerved into, you know, just talking about books we read growing up and books that he read growing up and influences now and things like that. And, it was a good time. And, I want to, you know, I can't stress enough how cool of a company DC is, and how supportive they are of their retailers to do things like this. And that was not a McDonald's they took us to. They took us to a nice place.
Yeah.
So DC is truly a company that is out there with their customers in mind, and they're not just pumping crap out as an intellectual property farm like some companies do.
I think the other thing to note too is that DC Comics listens. Mm-hmm. They listen to retailers. I mean, numbers, you know, voting with your wallet speaks louder than anything, but they listen. They actually truly do listen to us. And as we've developed this relationship, if we need something from them, they give it to us. But even more than that, they ask us what's working, what's not working. How can we help? What do you need help with? Mm-hmm. We've already kind of laid the groundwork with a couple of companies, and DC is one of them, for October 1st for the World's Smallest Comic-Con. You know, we're thousands of miles away from where these companies are often headquartered, but they want to be a part of it. They want to support us. They want to be able to show that they truly do care, and they understand that at the end of the day, the customers are the ones that they need to make sure are happy. And how do they do that? Well, they try and make sure that we have the tools.
Yeah, not to mention, I think if anybody put a lot into the booth that they had set up at San Diego, it was DC.
Oh my gosh, it was easily the brightest, most colorful, and they had like 3-inch thick foam underneath their carpet. Yeah. It was just glorious to go.
Well, also the layout of their, and this is not meant to be an entire session of bashing Marvel and praising DC, but Marvel's booth was laid out, was sort of the traditional big giant square where there was like a big stage in the middle.
Big TV.
Right. And there was a TV, and for some stupid reason, they were playing Miley Cyrus. I don't know why. They had a couple tables stationed at each side of their big square, and they give away posters sort of randomly here or there. DC had theirs lined up with the way that
everything was on angles.
Set up. Right. So you could go in, you'd come in from like four corners. It was like sort of, it fed into all these different areas in the booth. It wasn't like Marvel where you're just sort of walking around the perimeter of it. They used every inch of property that they had there.
We'll try and get some pictures of the different cases. They had a lot of costumes from Suicide Squad. The one that I thought was the coolest, which hopefully we get a picture of and put up here, was Linda Carter's original Wonder Woman costume. Mm-hmm. And you look at that compared to Margot Robbie's, and it's kind of crazy. Gal Gadot, not Margot Robbie.
Well, and the other thing is, DC had they had a big stage, but unlike Marvel, with Marvel you stood on the outside and you looked into the middle of this thing where there's a stage and you couldn't really approach it. DC, you had to walk into the middle of it and then look
the stage was on
to the outside of to the outside of the perimeter there, and the stage looked back into the middle of DC's booth. So it was really cool. It made it easy for them to get a lot more people in there and see that. Well, in the other 75% of the booth, they were able to do a lot of other things. So DC really, really had a great booth there.
Because they had two corners had signings going on. One was Vertigo-based signings, one was DC proper-based signings. And then we talked about the corner that had the stage on it.
They had a mad section.
Opposite corner of that was a green screen for selfies and pictures with different, they'd have different cutouts that would come in. They'd have different prop characters come in. So it was just, there was always a lot of buzz. And I think as a con participant who didn't necessarily need to see everything happening at everybody's booth all the time, I appreciated DC's, like you said, it forced the people to be inside the booth to look at the stage. Whereas with Marvel, open up, they blocked three lanes of people moving because people just stopped to look. And it, you know, that's great if it's something you want to see. But if it's, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for the fourth time, you really don't care. Mm-hmm. You just want to keep moving. So kudos to them for that, for DC doing that.
Jumping on to a different thing. The other thing that we got Saturday before we left was the Fox booth had this kind of cool promotion where if you pre-ordered the Age of Apocalypse DVD or
Blu-ray
or the X-Men Apocalypse, I guess, you got a Dazzler kind of fake record.
It was a prop from within the movie, right?
I think they said it was a prop from a deleted scene. I actually haven't seen the movie yet. So I said, well, you know, I'm probably going to see the movie anyways, so I might as well just pay $20 for the Blu-ray and get this fake record. So I'm going to have a Dazzler record in my collection now that I can never listen to, but it was just kind of a neat idea, and I give Marvel and Fox a lot of credit for coming up with neat little promotional items like that, because it got me to buy a $20 movie that I probably would not have bought otherwise. I would have just probably, you know, red boxed it or something. So props to them for coming up with a neat San Diego exclusive. The other thing we did, everybody goes for the big exclusives. Everybody wants to get the, you know, the 1 in 400 Funko Pops or whatever that are already selling for. We looked up some of them, the ones that even by the time we got in, the lines were 90 people long, and you may get one, you may not. It was just
There's this goofy thing. There's a sales pavilion that opens at 6 or 7 in the morning, something like that, and you have to line up to get a ticket or a wristband just to be allowed to get into the Funko booth. And people start lining up hours before that, and it's
So needless to say, we didn't do that. What we did do was we happened to walk by the Hasbro booth at the most opportune time that we could have, because in the days past, and even earlier that day, the line was huge. It was just gigantic, to the point where they had
overflow up against the front conference
wall. They had a giant overflow line that was halfway across the convention floor. So it was normally insanity to get up there, but we walked by towards the end of the day, and it was a pretty short line, pretty quick moving line. So we jumped in there and we grabbed a couple cool exclusives that we didn't go out there to grab a bunch of hot toys.
No, we went out there. We got to somehow bring it all back.
Yeah, which that is a project in and of itself. But we said, you know what? Here's the stuff. Let's jump into the Hasbro line and pick some stuff up. And they were already sold out of a couple of the things that we had been looking at. But we were able to get some neat items, and so we'll be bringing those back with us.
Yep.
So Hasbro, I got to give them credit for having a system down, you know. The other thing that you should make note of, if you ever plan to come and pick stuff up, Hasbro makes you pull your badge out, your attendance badge, and then they stamp it based on the...
And they mark off the things that you purchase.
Right, based on the product you're buying.
Because the product, their exclusives are one per person per convention. Some booths are one per person per day.
Yep.
So,
or there some items are just limited until they sell out, so you could conceivably have one person buy
all of them,
which I think is probably what must have happened with the Hughes, Betty, and Veronica's, because we watched that stack go down.
It went from like 100, or no, maybe 200 or 250 to zero in about a day. less than that.
Like it was 4 hours. A couple hours, because they were gone by the time you showed up to do the signing. But, so props to them for doing that, for giving everyone a chance and not enabling the people that would just spend the entire show coming back in line. Yeah. Although we certainly saw people that were very, very well-oiled teams of exclusive, probably resellers, I guess. And don't get me wrong, we're going to resell some of the ones that we got. But there was one group we saw that had, because they give you these gigantic Transformer or My Little Pony bags, or both. They're on either side.
But these are big bags. Like, you can hide people in these bags. The only bag that's bigger is the one we got from the Image booth, which literally could hide James or I in it. It is so big.
And we're not small.
No.
We are tired, though.
If you can't tell, it's been a long day.
But anyways, we saw a huge group of probably 7 or 8 of them, and they had all their bags put together, piled on boxes of like NECA exclusives that they had brought. And there was one guy who was rapidly assigning everyone with kind of marching orders. Like, you're going to go here and you're going to pick this, 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 and this up. You're going to stand in line here and you're going to pick up this, this, and this. And I thought, man, these guys, they probably have a box truck outside and they're filling half of it up every day. Like, it was,
and we found out, something
to watch.
No, they don't have a box truck. They use one of the pedal rickshaws to move all of that stuff.
That's right.
So they had two rickshaws, one for the people and one for the boxes.
Yeah, well, at the very least, somebody was doing that. NECA is another company that is, well, and I guess we should clarify too with Hasbro. that they will only sell to anyone that doesn't have an attendee badge on
Saturday
or Sunday. So if there's an item that sells out by Friday, it's not just other retailers that are buying it, because you tend to have issues at a lot of bigger shows with exclusives where who are the people that are in there before the show opens anyway? The other exhibitors, right? So if a company has a bunch of exclusives, they're the guys that are lining up to buy them. So you'll have some shows. I've been at many, many conventions where the product that the companies are selling will sell out before or right when the show opens. And then the only people that have them are other vendors who, you know, mark them up double or triple what they should be. In fact, we even saw that in a couple other areas. There was one of the things NECA had where we talked about these in the previous podcast, but the arcade style Ninja Turtle figures. Mm-hmm. And they were $100 for a set of four. And then they had a set that had Shredder and some members of the Foot Clan. And that was $100 as well. And it was limit two per person,
yep,
per day. Well, we walked, I mean, that was what NECA was selling. That was like their big advertised show exclusive. And if you went a couple booths down in the vendor section, you had vendors that had obviously just bought those hours before that had those out two for $500, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you were too lazy to walk across the convention floor to NECA, you could buy it for them from these guys for $300 more. And you always want to watch out, make sure that if you're paying money for an exclusive, it's not still available somewhere else in the show.
Yep.
But so Hasbro does that. Hasbro will limit you.
Image. You could buy some of their exclusive, con-exclusive books. You could only buy one issue of per person per day. Some of them were mm-hmm. unlimited.
Yeah, the Snotgirl.
Snotgirl was limited, one per person per day. But the Negan ones were until they sold out.
Yeah, and they still had, when we walked by there today, they still had a bunch. Mm-hmm. Eric Powell's Hillbilly mm-hmm. had a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive cover, and that sold out like the first or second hour of the first day. And now that book's going for like $100. So that's an instance where, you know, what can you do? It was, and I just talked to another reseller who was only there the first 2 days, and he texted me and told me that he picked up a bunch of copies of Hillbilly. And I thought, well, all right, whatever. Somebody bought them probably before the show opened. And what can you do?
Yep. Well, so that pretty much was our day. We made it back out to the house. We settled down. I think we're going to call it a night. We got one more day to go.
We're off our game. We are tired. We're running in maybe 4 hours of sleep, maybe like sweaty 4 hours of sleep here in California. And then we'll probably get about 4 hours of sleep tonight. And
do it again.
We'll be back with you tomorrow.
All right. We will talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right. Hey, everyone. This is Eric coming with the Sunday recap. It's just going to be me today, no James, just due to scheduling, travel, etc. We just weren't able to record together, so I apologize for that, but I will do my best to cover for the things that he wanted to talk about. Sunday found us in a different hotel. We got up and left the first place we were staying, moved over to the second one, and got down to the convention right as it was opening. And we didn't really have an agenda today. There was nothing that we had to get done. There was nothing we needed to purchase, no one that we needed to meet or see. So it was really just kind of a last day for us to run through the convention, see what we wanted to, and then call it a good time. So what we ended up doing was kind of starting over in the retailer area. There was some, I think Resident Evil had kind of a demo type thing going on. There was a few other video game-esque booths set up, and just some random smattering of pop culture ephemera. So there was some spots that had books, there were some spots that had figures, some that had a little bit of both.
So we just kind of browsed and took it all in. One thing's for sure, like we talked about in the past, San Diego is not necessarily the place to go if you're looking for discounts, deals. You could get some deals, but you're not going to find, you know, boxes and boxes of Bronze and Copper Age books that are buck a piece or, you know, short box for $50, things like that. So we just kind of took it all in again and just were looking at things. Not to mention we were already laden down with everything we had purchased already. So we just kind of browsed for a while. We walked past the J.C. Lee booth and saw Stan Lee as he was making his exit from there. He stepped in quick to say hi to his daughter and then was kind of taken off. So we saw that for a bit and then shot out. We also went around to meet some of the retailers that had booths at the event that we actually had met at the D.C. retailer dinner on Saturday night. So that was really fun, getting a chance to catch back up with them in the morning. And they were doing all doing very well. They kind of talked through some of the books and stuff that they had, and that was a good time. After that, we kind of moseyed on back over towards the DC booth. It was kind of a perfect place because it was right in the middle of the show. It was obviously people that we know, so there was a comfort factor built in there. And it was just one of those things where right beside DC was Image, there was Skybound, there was IDW. It was all right in there. So we just kind of would make our way to DC. And we did, and found ourselves standing in line for Freddie E. Williams II, who we've already seen a couple of times, but he was doing little free sketches. So James got a free sketch, and then we went over to his table after. And actually, I think James picked up a paid sketch. But no, it was a good time. We chatted with him for a bit, and just kind of one of those things where the table was set for two signing folks, and then the lines formed kind of behind the table, and you wrapped around, and we got done with Freddie and just went right back around, and there was James Tinney in the fourth, and we spent some good time chatting with him. We talked about, obviously, he's writing Detective. He gave us a little bit of background between he and Scott Snyder and how they met. Actually, James was a student of Scott's, and they found that they both kind of believed in the same approach to writing books, pacing, conclusions. They found when they started working on books together that they would get to the same plot points at the same time as they were conceiving and storyboarding individually. So that was kind of how that whole partnership worked out, and James just kind of really got brought into the mainstream of DC Comics with Scott. Obviously, Scott has moved over. He's going to be doing All-Star Batman. James is going to be continuing his work now on Detective Comics. And then we spent a little bit of time talking with James about his, I believe they're through the Boom imprint. He's got a couple of miniseries that have come out, Mimetic and Cognetic, both three-issue miniseries. And I, of course, ever thinking, had to ask him, so is this going to be a trilogy of trilogies? Is it going to be one more? To which he smiled and said, yes, there is one more three-issue miniseries coming out that'll be called Eugenic. Basically, these are three apocalyptic things that he's come up with that would kind of end the world. So this is the third and final one that he's got, at least at this point, planned. And it sounds like it's pretty well along in production. It should be coming out in the next couple of months. So if you liked Mimetic or Cognetic, keep an eye out for that. Look for it. What else do we do? He is a writer, not an artist, but he grabbed my sketchbook and he's like, can I? And I said, sure. And the next thing I know, he drew me a robot Batman. And he said it was the only thing he knew how to draw, but it was still kind of cool. It's a neat little keepsake that I've got now. After that, we thought, you know, we're right here near the Boom Studios booth. Let's take a spin by, and Dan Mora was there. And if you're following our Facebook page, you know that the Eisners came out while we were in San Diego, and you know who won the award for the most promising newcomer, and that was Mr. Dan Mora. So we swung by, gave him quick congratulations. He had a few people waiting to talk to him, so we kept moving right along. But that was really great to see a creator who is doing amazing, amazing work. If you haven't picked up Claws, you better get it because it's really good. So we did that and then went back over to Artist Alley. Our usual suspect of Otis Frampton was busy with people at his table, so we weren't going to barge in and say anything. Katie Cook had a steady stream still going to her. And then as we were walking along, we noticed this banner that said Golden Age Classics. And we're like, what the heck is this all about? So we kind of took another peek, and here it was. This was a Golden Age artist who worked with Stan Lee. And one of the things that he had drawn was Captain America. And we thought, well, we got to stay for this and see who this guy is. So if you look on our Facebook page and you see our post of Mr. Alan Bellman, that is the Golden Age artist. And much like James's experience with Russ Heath, Mr. Bellman is getting up there in years. I think he's 92, 94, something like that. So he's getting up there in years, but boy, was he was on walking on his own, getting around, and just super excited to have people come up and see him. He was signing prints of his past work, or you could even get him to do sketches, and those sketches did not look that bad. They were really nice. So the only catch with the sketches was there's a 6 to 8 week turnaround on them just because of the backlog he has and some of the travel commitments he's got. So, but it was a wonderful chance to talk to him. This is a man who's very proud of the work that he's done, but equally as appreciative of the people who enjoy the work that he has done. If you see the picture, he's got rings on his fingers, and one of them is a Captain America ring. He's wearing a Captain America shirt over a red, white, and blue plaid shirt. He's got a Captain America button, a Captain America necklace, a Captain America lanyard for his badge. I mean, this guy just screams Captain America and his love for the character and that art. So it was a nice chance to touch base with him. We kind of meandered back over to the DC booth. Again, it's in the middle of the show, so if you're going from one end to the other, it's where you end up. And notice that there's a gentleman sitting kind of, he had one person talk to him, and then that person left, and so he's sitting alone at a table. And James and I were like, well, who is that? Let's go find out. Here to find out, it was Mr. Paul Levitz. And some of you may know that Paul was the president of DC Comics from 2002 to 2009. He was one of the folks that was instrumental in hiring Marv Wolfman, George Perez, some of those other great artists and creators that came in during the kind of the renaissance of DC Comics when they rejuvenated themselves in the 80s and a little before and a little after. So we had a really nice discussion with him, talked about what he's up to now. He's going to be writing a book for DC that's going to be coming out. He's still with DC. It's been, I think, 35 years, I want to say. So that was fantastic just to chat with him. He also gave us some pointers on a few things we can try at the store to maybe give a little bit different of an experience for certain folks if you're looking for a specific type of item. Just some really great insight that he's had. So we'll see. That those things might be rolling in here in the next couple of months. We'll see. But we had a really great discussion with him. Then, of course, we chatted with Stuart a little bit more and thanked him for the wonderful dinner that he had taken us out to, or that DC taken us out to. And we also picked up a few con-exclusive DC t-shirts. So some of these were shirts that only the DC employees had access to. Some of them were shirts that the booth was able to sell and provide. So there should be a couple of exclusive shirts for sale at the store. I think there's a Suicide Squad one. It might be one or two of the DC new logo shirts. There should be a DC Superheroes Girl cape or two that's for sale there. So if you're looking for those things, feel free to stop in and ask. But after that, we pretty much just kind of moseyed the floor a little bit longer and said, okay, I think we're done. We've done our damage, and it's time to head out. So we hightailed it out of there, got back to our hotel, and then the great packing event began. Being first-timers to San Diego and having flown quite a bit, I had consciously made the decision that I was only going to fly with a carry-on and a backpack, figuring I could just fit what I got in there. So I'm going to give all of you that are frequent travelers a heads up on that. If that's your mindset, you're going to want to change that a little bit, or just do what we did. We ended up picking up so much stuff, there was no way it was going to fit in our two bags and two backpacks that we had between the two of us. So we ended up going out and asking some of the vendors on Sunday if we could take some of their boxes from their stock that they had emptied. And that's what we did. We took our boxes back to the hotel room. We filled them with goodies, wrapped them in our clothing as padding, and got everything ready to go, boxed up, taped, and were able to check those on the plane. So, you know, you got to sometimes just think on your toes, and it worked out well. So we got home. There should be posts online by the time this recording airs showing our convention exclusives. We've had a lot of people reaching out to us that know that we're in San Diego, and they've been asking, you know, are you guys going to bring anything back? Is there going to be stuff for sale? Yes, there is. Some of it is already starting to sell before we're even back. Some of it is going fast. So, if you want something, stop in and look for it and grab it. But kind of the overall last impressions of San Diego are, if you get a chance to go and you can swing the time off and the hotel costs and things like that, do it. Just do it, because it's an experience unlike any other. Is it a great show for going and digging through, you know, tons and tons of back issue boxes for a buck a piece or things like that? No, it's not. But the experience that you will get, the amount of creators that are here, and the density of high caliber creators is something that I haven't seen in any other show that I've gone to. It truly is an experience. It's not just a convention. It's an experience, because it goes beyond the convention center. It's in a lot of the buildings in the Gaslamp district that have either been rented out for private events or green spaces that have been turned into go-kart tracks or things like that. I mean, it is truly a spectacle to see, and I highly encourage any of you that have a chance to go. On behalf of myself and James, I think we would both like to profusely thank our wives and our families for allowing us to have this indulgence, and more importantly, for being there to transport us to and from as needed from airports and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, make sure you thank your loved ones, because really they're the ones that that put up with our crazy hobby, and they let us do these things. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. If you have any questions or comments or want to kind of get in on the discussion, go ahead and shoot us an email at podcast@cowabungacomics.com. We haven't really gotten too many questions, so if we do get questions, we'll answer them right on our recordings as we go. You can also find us on Facebook if you go to facebook.com/incredicow, or just search for Cowabunga Comics with a K. Our website is cowabungacomics.com. And we are also on the Twitters. Our handle is @IncrediCow. So if anyone has anything you'd like to say, find us on those channels. And also, don't forget, our second now World's Smallest Comic-Con will be coming up in October, October 1st. And if you stay tuned to our website and the events page, you will see the creators that we have lined up. And I guarantee you there's a couple of them that might surprise you, or at least excite you quite a bit. So we hope to see you there, and as always, we'll talk to you next time.